This is the Big Show Podcast on TSN1290.ca.
Good morning, everybody, and welcome to the Big Show on TSN 1290 and TSN1290.ca. Jim Tolt, Troy Weston, and Brandon Rewicki with you on a Monday. It's going to be warm out, almost 20, almost, and it's a little rainy out, so that warm rain you can expect today, tomorrow, and throughout this first week of October. The first week of October means the National Hockey League drops a puck on the regular season. That'll get started on Wednesday, including your very own Winnipeg Jets hosting the Toronto Maple Leafs. They wrapped up the preseason on Saturday in Calgary with a 3-2 shootout loss. The Bombers have improved to 10-3. We're going to be all over that as well. We're going to talk the President's Cup. We're going to talk some Major League Baseball. Playoffs are set. And Mr. Donaldson wants to stay a Blue Jay. We're going to get into the Jets roster. Cuts are coming today for this team and for every National Hockey League team. They have to be in by 4 p.m. Central Time. We expect an announcement sometime this morning. There's 29 players in camp, and they have to get down to 23. Injuries will play into that. We'll discuss that. Brian Munns will join us. We're also going to talk to Marshall Ferguson about the CFL and Jonathan Davis from West Coast Hockey. And an hour of your phone calls on the Bombers, on the Jets, start of the season, and the weekend that was. Lots of NFL as well. Gentlemen, how are we today?
Not too bad. Decent weekend. I was in a coaching clinic for a bunch of the weekend boys, and it was almost more like a tryout for a team or something, the way they were running us through drills. But it was a bunch of fun, a good weekend. Old man hockey started at over at Old Maples Arena, so it was great seeing all the old guys out there as well.
Yeah, no old man hockey for me. I just lived like an old man on the weekend. I just didn't. So I think I finally persevered through the illness. So a lot of sitting, a lot of fluids. Good to go, boys.
You have that sound where you're at your worst, which usually means you're better.
Exactly.
Yes. Good for you. Stay healthy. Now I feel like I got something, but we'll see what happens. It is a big week. We will get into the Bombers win in Edmonton, but we'll start with the Jets. They lose 3-2 in a shootout, and now there are some questions. And head coach Paul Maurice, we will hear from throughout this show as well, but he basically stated after the game that, you know, there were some questions, there are some questions, but pretty much played out the way they thought it would. No cuts yesterday, nobody waived yesterday or put on waivers, so today we expect that to happen. They'll practice today at 10:30 at Bell MTS Place. They'll do it again tomorrow at 11 a.m., and then the puck drops on the season for the Winnipeg Jets and the National Hockey League Wednesday night. What'd you think of the game on Saturday night?
Well, it was, people couldn't watch it, right, and listen to it was a challenge at times. It was, this is what I took from the game. That highlight of Laine scoring, that first goal, that was majestic. I swear to goodness, I've watched it 250 times. Yesterday, I was just it was an extended period of time watching it on loop. I try and wrap my mind around the pullback and the oomph, like the quickness of that whole thing. That, I don't know that you're going to see a prettier goal this year than what Laine scored on in that exhibition game, man.
Yeah, I mean, there's a lot of people getting on the Flames' defense for that play. And I would just, if you're of that mindset, I would just say this. If you see a 6'5" rhinoceros barreling towards you at a decent clip, who's able to, like, you know, shortly after he dekes through three people in the neutral zone, like, you're going to try and tight gap that and think you're going to be just fine and dandy? Like, it's not like you're dealing with, you know, name your kind of AHL, NHL tweener. You're dealing with a legit goal scorer in the NHL. And then the fact that he has, like, he has nowhere to shoot. Yeah. He has no space to, like, he has no business getting that shot off. And with basically a tiny little flick of the wrist with the puck way back in his stance, not only does he get it on net, but to put it with pinpoint accuracy, and I love looking at goalies after Laine rips one, and he's not even looking where the puck. He's just kind of staring into the distance because he didn't see it. No, what just happened? So it's, I mean, what did he end up with? He scored another two in that game, so he's got, was that six goals in the preseason? Six or like...
Something like that.
He's leaving the preseason in scoring. Read a couple articles over the weekend that were very well put out about, you know, how many goals is he going to score because he had that 17 and a bit shooting percentage last year.
Any of them mentioned Mr. Richard?
There was a couple, yeah. But just, you know, like kind of mentioning that, you know, only Steven Stamkos shoots at 17% regularly.
Yeah.
So
yep.
Can you expect this to continue? And
I keep
trying to say no because, like, realistically, that's kind of a tough argument to base, right? That, yeah, don't worry, he'll shoot
but if you're
the
sniper,
same as Eddie Shooter, right? He's one of the best shooters in history. But then you see what he did Saturday, yeah. And you're like, well, is 17 too low? Like, is his shooting percentage going to, like, it's getting to that ridiculous point where, like, you kind of almost think he might just clip along at 17 for the next 5 or so years of his career.
Yeah, and the second one to me that stood out, or also stood out to me as well, with the Brian Little, just no indication of doing anything other than just feeding the puck over to Laine for the one-timer. I thought Mark Scheifele was really good in the game. He didn't come away with a point, but a little bit dominant. And now the questions start as we discuss the Jets' 3-2 shootout loss in Calgary to wrap up the preseason at 2-3-2. Here on the Big Show, TSN 1290. So who makes this team, gentlemen? They got to make six moves here. And Andrew Kopp took a shot off the knee in that game, and the x-rays came back negative, but they were going to reevaluate him yesterday. And Matt Hendricks is banged up as well, which could potentially open two spots on the forward lines or defense.
Just specifically for opening night, right? But when Paul Maurice says, hey, nothing really surprised us, then I think folks out there that were hoping a couple of the young fellas might jump up and grab spots, you can throw that out the window. Right?
Yeah, I don't know. Like, it's been a very interesting camp.
If nothing surprised them, then Hendricks, once he's healthy, will be the fourth line center. It's going to be, it certainly sounds like Matthias will be around, right? Matthias is going to be around, Hendricks will be around, and then start painting in people. But if he said nothing surprises, the vets that I think he utilized last year and the vets that he brought in will play.
Yeah, and I think, you know, Paul Maurice actually said in the post-game clip that, you know, when trying to whittle down the roster, he said, well, the coaches made their decision last week that it was just kind of up to Chevy for the final few pieces here, which I mean, that's about as telling as it gets, right? It's at that point, it's Maurice's guys that are going to make it through. Mm-hmm. And I mean, if you want to look at kind of the for sure send downs, I think at this point, Pullman's getting sent down just, you know, because of the number game that we talked about throughout last week. Spacek for sure is getting sent down. I would assume Roslovic is basically a lock as well. And then after that, you know, probably Brendan Lemieux. Mm-hmm. And I would say JC LaPonne as well. So then you're looking at two more cuts that need to be made at that point. And as much as people might not like to hear it, I don't see a way Hendricks is gone. Which then, to me, and I agree with Matthias, that to me leaves Tanev, Patan, and Dano as your kind of three bubble guys at that point.
For two spots. So who's getting what? Patan can go down. Dano has to be waived. And I guess it depends on health. Like, if Matt Hendricks isn't ready to go, does Nick Patan make the team then? Are we in agreement Nick Patan's getting sent down?
The constant reminders of the importance of the PK and that sort of thing, I would say, yeah. Like, if everyone's healthy, I would be very surprised based on what we've heard from Maurice and also with the no surprises thing that, yeah, I would expect him to get sent down.
It would surprise me more if he made the team. Mm-hmm. I think he could still make the team, but that at this point seems like a major, major long shot. There's a legit argument, I think, to make for sending Nick Patan down to the Moose. But if there's a decision to be made between Marco Dano and Brandon Tanev, then I don't know what's going on. Like, there has to be some other real serious off-ice thing going on. Because you can't make any argument as to what Brandon Tanev does better than Marco Dano other than skate faster.
And then there's, like, pull the emergency brake because there's nothing else to be said but what he would do better.
See, and this isn't an indictment on Brandon Tanev, but Mark O'Donnell played 12 minutes and 25 seconds, 5 minutes and 14 seconds on the power play Saturday, and he just didn't stand out to me at all. Like, he was fine, but...
Has Tanev ever stood out to you outside of Skating Fest? Like, Tanev doesn't do anything outside of Skate Fest. That's the thing. Like, there's no... You can't even... There's no production
He kills penalties for them, and he does the proverbial crash and bang and forecheck and with the speed. But I guess the flip side of the whole debate is, what do you expect from him compared to Dano? Like, do you expect him to score points? I don't. Do you expect Dano to score points? I do.
Everyone has to be able to freaking produce. You can't have someone that is going to, you know, go out there and deliver at a .04 rate over an extended period of time. Like that whole, and I don't even like utilizing him on the PK. I don't like that. I don't like to me. And I said this months ago, that the best penalty killers, penalty kill teams on the team are using guys that are out there that have fantastic puck awareness and you know, utilize their sticks well, and skating is an important part of that as well in the PK. But like, compare to me the hockey sense of, say, a Blake Wheeler on the penalty kill as opposed to what a guy like Brandon Tanev, which do you think is going to be more successful? Like, what is being changed with the Winnipeg Jets penalty kill if Brendan Tanev is out there killing penalties?
Dano had 12-25, 5-14 on the power play. Brendan Tanev had 12-16 and 2-55 on the penalty kill.
And, like, to me, even on a penalty kill, Dano and the usage of his stick and his sort of puck awareness is superior to Tanev.
Andrew Kopp only played 650 because of the block shot, but 251 of that 650 was on the penalty kill. Like, if there's anything to take out of the Calgary game, for me, it sort of shows who's going to be where. And like, Sean Matthias, 253 on the penalty kill. Brian Little played both, 405 on the man advantage, 132 on the kill. Joel Armia played 231 on the penalty kill and only had 1 second, but he only played 834, though.
You know, another thing, JT, if the Jets are going with this passive penalty kill, and it's ridiculously passive, what in the hell do you need a burner for? What do you need a guy that can cover all kinds of space in a hurry? Like that's just an absolute contradiction that makes zero sense.
Well, and that gets down to the ultimate tactical. It's just 100% tactical at that point, more so than even player. Like, it doesn't even matter who you deploy player-wise at that point.
That's right.
And not only that, too, but you're talking...
Outside of stick and puck sense.
Yeah, but and then you're talking about putting guys like Wheeler and Little and Scheifele out there. Oh, boy, you're asking for a lot of trouble if you're putting those guys to try and... I guess it would be to lock down the box there, and you're talking about blocking shots, and what happens with blocked shots?
Yeah.
Broken bones, bruised, like it's...
And I just think ice time, too. Like, if you're going to have those guys on the power play and you're going to have those guys lead dogs on the 5-on-5 and kill penalties, that's just a ton of ice time over an 82-game schedule for, you know, your best players.
Well, and they'll need the bottom six to kill penalties. There's no doubt about that. But it's if we're talking specifically about Brandon Tanev, there's still, you know, take the power plays out of the game, there's still 45 to 50 minutes of a hockey game played 5-on-5. And he gives you... no advantage there whatsoever. So is he a good enough penalty killer to make up for his net negative results 5-on-5? He's not. So you're by having him in those 12 skaters on the ice, you are losing the battle to begin with already. And this we know how tough the Central is going to be, how tight it's going to be, right? Like, it's 1 through 6. It's almost a coin flip with all those teams. The Jets need every single advantage and edge they can get, and they're just throwing away a bit of an edge and a bit of an advantage if they're going to have Brandon Tanev out there.
And this whole, like, the managing, I don't know how much you necessarily, you can take away from the power play with Blake Wheeler, for instance, him specifically, take time away. You want Scheifele on your top power play team for sure, or line, but to utilize possibly Little and Wheeler as your primary PK, like in Boston they do with Bergeron's line. Right? Those guys are the driving force with their penalty kill, which is amongst the best in the league. So you can manage it. The Jets have enough upper-end talent. And the whole thing is you need talent on your penalty kill or your penalty kill's going to suck again. This is the whole thing. Guys out there, they need to have good puck sense and smart sticks and all the rest of it. Just dumping a guy like Brendan Tanev out there who doesn't look like he has a lot of puck sense. You know, necessarily compared to a guy like, say, a Blake Wheeler, or getting a stick in the right spot. Like the guy's the Tasmanian devil out there. 100 miles an hour, skates like crazy, but is he really going to – that doesn't make him a good penalty killer, though.
Are you left wanting more from Dano, or are you okay with what he's been given?
I don't understand. Like, people just chill on Dano and let him grow into a spot. You know, like, put him on the fourth line for an extended period and let him grow into something. I don't really understand the as far as him being on the fourth line. If he's not on the fourth line, my crime has been committed.
We will delve into the lineup at the top of the Royal Sports Power Hour, 7 o'clock, and give our projected lines. Of course, cuts are coming today. A roster could come out while we're on the air, but we will keep you up to date. That has to be in by 4 p.m. Central Time. We'll talk Bombers and Eskimos next. The Blue Bombers are 10-3. On The Big Show, TSN 1290.
This is The Big Show Podcast on TSN1290.ca. Catch The Big Show with Jim Toth, Troy Westwood, and Brandon Ruwicki. Weekdays 6 to 11 on TSN 1290.
Back on The Big Show, TSN 1290, TSN1290.ca. Ryan Hart's going to join us to talk President's Cup at the bottom of the hour. Jim Tolt, Troy Westwood, and Brandon Ruwicki with you. 24 minutes past the hour, and we'll now get into it. The Bombers beat the Edmonton Eskimos 28-19 on Saturday night in Edmonton. They improve their record to 10-3 and basically solidify a very good spot in the standings at second overall in the league and the West. Your thoughts on the game, gentlemen?
Super impressed with what the boys did out there, and mostly with what the defense did. It was, you know, it looked like an MLS game there in the first half, really, and just mind blown that this team is sitting 10-3 here, and in absolute control to get a home playoff game. Andrew Harris is truly something special to watch out there. Is just remarkable. And this team to win 8 of its last 9, for the defense to step up to the degree. People are really like wondering or completely buying into this defense. I'm going to pull the reins back a little bit, but if this defense, it has been improving as we go forward, and you see the impact a guy like Chris Randle, that side is on such lockdown. The other side is improving, no question about it. Their defensive front, their D-line specifically, is a handful. If this, you know, over the next X number of final weeks here, 6 or so weeks here, if they can continue to improve a little bit and ultimately make it so that they can compete something approaching what Calgary brings to the table possibly and just set themselves up real well here, complement that offense of theirs, they're going to be a very good and dangerous team come playoff time.
Yeah, it was, I mean, you don't have to buy into them just yet, but that was the first time all season the defense won them a game. They were outstanding. There's no other way to put it. And, yeah, Edmonton picked up some yards and some big plays in the second half, but they have three outstanding weapons, you know, when you look at their receiving core. Like, they're going to make some plays eventually. But when you have half a field that gets locked down and now a defensive line, it's, you know, even with Westerman gone, they were in Mike Riley's ear all game long. They were making life extremely difficult. You know, the run game was okay that Edmonton was able to produce. It wasn't good enough, at least. And I was blown away. I thought there was no way they would be able to find a way to slow down Edmonton's offense. And, you know, give even, you know, Brian Walker and Brandon Alexander some credit, because they got beat for sure on one or two deep balls, but they made a couple nice plays on two of them as well. Whereas, you know, that first game against Edmonton, it was basically, you know, they weren't 50-50 balls, they were 80-20 balls. And that's, you know, kind of allowed Edmonton a chance in this one. But they were outstanding. I was completely blown away by how well the Bomber defense played. And the offense did what we just kind of expect out of them all year, where they were, the numbers probably didn't, or the score didn't show how good they played, because if Bedlock has an average day, you know, they break 30 pretty easily in Edmonton.
You know what's interesting too is we talked about this at the start of the season, but they are 5-1 at home and 5-2 on the road, and we talked about how they needed to start piling up some wins at Investors Group Field. And should they host a playoff game, which it looks like they will, barring some massive setback in the next five games, the Bombers have sort of played very well at home and very well on the road. I was impressed with the win. I kind of thought they would win on a Justin Medlock field goal, as I said at the start on Friday's show. And then Justin Medlock had his struggles, and I was wondering, oh boy. I mean, and that's maybe one thing that was lost in this game is they won 28-19. They could have won by, you know, nine more points, maybe.
Well,
no,
not just that. Because they also had the Fiola Godino fumble inside the 30-yard
line. Right, yeah.
They
like
three
every
missed
time
field
they went...
goals early on, and then that deep missed field goal. The whole Medlock thing, you just kind of wonder where he's at. It is interesting as an athlete, though, and it, you know, whichever position you want to talk about, but of course the kicking position is kind of different. When you do have a night like that, so long as the team wins, you escape. Right, everyone remembers. Yeah, he had a bad game, but it's pretty easily brushed aside. If the Bombers end up losing that game, then Medlock is under some fairly severe fire this week.
A Winnipegger and a member working for the PGA Tour, Ryan Hart, joins us next to talk some golf on the Big Show, TSN 1290.
This is the Big Show podcast on TSN1290.ca. Catch the Big Show with Jim Toth, Troy Westwood, and Brandon Ruwicki weekdays 6 to 11 on TSN 1290.
TSN 1290 and Gypsum Drywall Interiors present Caring for Kids. Support the staff and services of the Children's Hospital Foundation of Manitoba today. Text KIDS to 129090. Standard message rates may apply. Every time you do, Gypsum Drywall Interiors will donate $1 to the Children's Hospital, up to $1,000. Your actions can help the Children's Hospital keep caring for kids across Manitoba. Kids like Michaela, who is currently battling cancer. For more on Caring for Kids, visit TSN1290.ca. Jim Toth, Troy Westwood, Brandon Ruwicki with you on the Big Show. We're going to get into MLB playoffs. Josh Donaldson wants to remain a Blue Jay. Plenty to come on the NFL. And, of course, your Jets. It is roster cutdown day. They have till 4 p.m. Central. I expect something to be announced this morning. They will practice 10:30 today, either prior or after practice or during, I think, is when the lineup will come out. We'll delve into that at the top of the hour. On the Royal Sports Power Hour, we'll sort of give our predictions for the lineup. They have 29 players left, and they have to get down to 23 by 4 p.m. Central. The President's Cup wrapped up over the weekend, and our good friend and Winnipegger, Ryan Hart, with the PGA Tour, joins us now. Good morning, Ryan. Hello, Ryan.
Morning, guys.
How are you?
Not too bad. How are things there?
Hey, pretty good. It's a little rainy here today, but that's okay. It's nice and warm out. I guess we'll just start with your overall impressions of how everything went with the President's Cup, a big victory for the U.S.
Yeah, you know what? It was awesome. I mean, I think that, you know, a lot of people going into Sunday, obviously, were talking a lot about the gap that had to be overcome or the route, however you wanted to look at it. But I think all in all, it was a great battle. And I think, you know, there's been so much chat about the format in the U.S. and how dominant they've been in this versus the Ryder Cup and whatnot. But I think at the end of the day, it was great drama. It was great for the sport. And it turned out to be an unbelievable event on the biggest stage that we could have here in New York.
Can I just expand a little bit maybe on the possibility or the thought of changing the format to make it a little bit more competitive? There seems to be such dominance with the Americans with this specific event, Ryan. Do you think at some point in time we'll possibly see something changed with this specific event?
I don't think there's anything on the horizon now. I mean, if you go back, look at the history of the Ryder Cup, and there was a lot of dominance there, and then really the Ryder Cup went to the next level when the Europeans really started winning and being a bit more competitive and the rivalry built and so on and so forth. I think you're going to see that. I think it's hopefully it's cyclical. But the format is what it is, and it makes for unbelievable drama. It's just, you know what? this team was that good. I mean, if you look at the amount of birdies made across the board, they're just that good. But I mean, all the players on either of those teams, you know, I mean, if the Internationals had a hot week, it could have gone the other way. I mean, that's just match play for you.
Ryan, we heard from the other half, and they were saying that, you know, they have to get better and they have to take it more serious. Adam Scott was very vocal about that. What needs to be done in your mind? Do you agree with Adam Scott's comments?
Well, you know what? When you have a rotation, I guess maybe taking it more serious. I don't know if the Europeans, we obviously can't speak on the international side, sorry. If they take Ryder Cups more serious when it comes to the Europeans, or, you know, the Internationals just need to look at this much like the Europeans look at the Ryder Cup. But I don't think, you know what, when you look across the board, I don't think anybody gets into that arena and as a professional athlete and doesn't take it serious and doesn't want to win. I mean, you get on that first tee, you've got 1,500 people surrounding you and you're amped up. I think they're taking it serious. I mean, we had the good fortune. I spent a lot of time with our Junior President's Cup team at the beginning of the week, and we were interacting with the players, and they were taking it serious. I mean, there was, you know, you see some joking around and that sort of thing, but on the range, they were grinding. You know, they're going over shots. You look at the guys in the fairways in their practice rounds, they're grinding. I mean, I think in the moment they might say that, but they were taking it serious. Absolutely 100%.
It was real cool to watch the relationship, and I guess because it's so unknown and there were such opposing forces at their height, but to see the whole thing with Phil and Tiger was really cool.
Yeah, you know what? I mean, when you saw that hug in the end, and I think it's been all over social media and whatnot, I mean, there's a respect. I mean, you know, it's been said for many, many years that, you know what, if it wasn't for Tiger, you know, Phil could have been the most dominant player of the last 20 years. But you can't battle at that level and not have a respect for each other's game. And I know Phil's said it over the years that, you know, he wouldn't have a lot of the things that he did if it wasn't for what Tiger did. So you watch it around, you know, whether it's walking up to the first tee or the interaction with the fans. I mean, Tiger Woods is still, as much as he was the captain's assistant, he was a huge draw up here. I mean, the people calling out his name and the lineups for autographs around him, people could get near him. I mean, Tiger still moves the needle more than I think we like to think sometimes. But it was a special moment to see all of those guys come together and just be a team. I mean, they were having a ton of fun this week, and you could see it.
You know, and the news prior to the event starting was Tiger Woods' press conference, Ryan, just about admitting that, you know, due to what he's been through with his back and the surgeries and everything, he may be done playing competitive golf. That was sort of the news just before tee off with the President's Cup.
Yeah, and I mean, that's only Tiger will know that. And I don't think any of us can speculate, but if that's what he feels, that's what he feels. But I think Tiger will be around golf. I mean, it's all he's ever done. And I think you see him and how intense he is with just even being a captain's assistant. And, you know, the juice is going out there as much as anybody. So if it's competitive or not, Tiger will be around golf. And I think the sport will be good for that.
Hey, Ryan, it's pretty doggone impressive that the jacket or coat that she was wearing was cool, but just the fact that Brooke Henderson, her fifth LPGA title and just 20 years old, it's really neat to think of what her future might hold.
Well, I think we've talked about that before, guys. I mean, it's, you know what, she is a huge draw for the ladies' game. I had opportunity to have a conversation with some of the folks in Golf Canada that were down here for the President's Cup, and they were talking about the Canadian Women's Open and how much she was the draw. I mean, she moved the needle, which I don't think we've seen that in years, maybe since the great days of Lori Kane when she was popular. But they said the crowds were driven around her, and I mean, it's unbelievable what she's doing in such a short period of time and awesome for the game all the way around.
And Ryan, along those Canadian bloodlines that we like to talk about all the time, Adam Hadwin took part. What was that like for him, and how exciting was it for him and Matsuyama to sort of get out there and for him to get into this competition?
He looked pretty fired up all week and smiling all the time. I saw him yesterday behind the first tee, and he had the Fanatics outfit on. He had the hat and the shirt over top, and He was pretty excited to do that and stroll onto the first tee and get a little rise out of the guys. But, you know, I think it was pretty awesome. And I mean, you know, I go back to when he played in Winnipeg at the Players Cup, and I think about, you know, a handshake that we had in the locker room at Pine Ridge, and here it is. I mean, he's on a stage like this, fitting in with all these guys and just being one of the guys. And then to finish off your President's Cup week playing against Phil Mickelson, and if you watch them go up and down the fairways, I mean, like I said, he's just one of the guys, and he's fitting in. I think there's a lot of respect for the fire in Adam's game, and you saw that this week for sure.
There's not much of a rest here, and then the season, like in quotations, I almost use air quotes, the PGA season opens up right away again, right?
Yeah, I think, you know what, the guys got a little bit of rest, and some of the guys are playing in Napa Valley right away here this week.
Wow.
They play open.
Quick turnaround, for sure. What was the whole thing like, Ryan? I know you're heavily involved in organizing it. You're a big part of it now. And then to see it come to fruition and see how the fans get into it and everything took place, what was it like for you?
I'm not going to lie. I mean, I was in awe a couple times just standing there looking around. It was that first tee was something special. I mean, it was as close as you're going to get to a stadium in golf. And to see the, you know, people from however many countries were represented out there. I mean, there's lots of Canadians going around in their jumpsuits, and you saw a lot of Canadian flags going around, and so there was obviously some pride in that. But just we stopped. I was with one of my friends at the tour here. We were driving around making a couple drop-offs in hospitality, and then the ninth hole, Jordan Spieth was hitting his approach shot, and you looked around, and there probably was 15,000 people around that hole. And you saw the Statue of Liberty in the background. You just sort of, you take a moment, you pause, you look at it, and you go, we're pretty lucky to do what we do. And it was pretty special. So, humbled to be a part of it.
Yeah, it was fun to watch, too. It's always a great event to see some of the top golfers compete like this. Thanks for doing this, as always. Best to you as well, and we'll talk to you real soon. Thanks for doing this, Ryan.
Thanks for the time, guys. Have a great day.
Thanks so much, Ryan. Take care.
Ryan Hart of the PGA Tour. Who's your favorite part of the President's Cup? I mean, I watched mostly highlights of it. I didn't get to see much of the actual event going on, but I'm getting more and more into the competitive golf like this, where they go in pairs and face off against other countries.
I really love watching the team element of it, and you know, there's not many sports where I see the Americans having fun, and it warms my heart. But there was something like the press conference and how much fun a guy like Jordan Spieth was, and Matt Kuchar was hilarious during the conference and that sort of thing. So watching the almost, I guess what it is really, guys, is it's seeing them being human after the release and of the competitive aspect of the games, and certainly the week-to-week and the majors and all the rest of it. You don't get to see a lot of the personality of these guys, but they really dropped that a lot, and especially in the press conferences that followed after the win. It was just neat seeing them be kind of real.
Yeah, I think I watched 95% of this thing, and I love the trash talk. I love working the crowd, like, just, and I'm with you, Troy. I don't really like Americans in sports in too many things, but Justin Thomas, you know, giving the wave and doing the ear thing, like I'm all down for that. And we all remember the Ryder Cup in Medina and how awesome some of those duels were. I was the one thing that kind of bummed me out a bit though was watching Jason Day play. Just something not right with his game. Mm-hmm. And, you know, when he's on, he's right up there with, you know, name your top five golfers in the world. But just wasn't there all week, just wasn't good enough. And the internationals needed him to play like, you know, the former number one player in the world that he is.
How about Spieth and his singles record in Ryder Cup and the President's Cup, 0-5 is what he is. So, and they were teasing him about that yesterday in the press conference. They were calling him the golden child and saying that he needs to be teased a little bit about his singles record.
I thought Brandon would like that, actually. I thought that's what you would say your favorite
that
part was.
My heart.
We'll take a break here. We're going to get into the Jets roster and where we think it might play out at the top of the hour. But up next, we're going to talk some Major League Baseball playoffs. And Josh Donaldson lets management and the fans know what he wants to see happen concerning himself and the Toronto Blue Jays. That's next on The Big Show, TSN 1290. 1290.
This is the Big Show Podcast on TSN1290.ca. Catch the Big Show with Jim Toth, Troy Westwood, and Brandon Ruwicki. Weekdays 6 to 11 on TSN 1290.
You wanted it back and we caved. TSN 1290 wants to better your basement with a host of cool add-ons. This time there are two caves to choose from, the Man Cave or the Mam Cave. The Mam Cave includes a $500 women's Burton Gear shopping spree from Alter Ego Sports, a pizza party for 10 at Boston Pizza, two tickets to Shania Twain's Now Tour, May 13th at Bell MTS Place, a Winnipeg Jets girls' night out, including two seats to an upcoming home game this 2017-18 season at Bell MTS Place, and a customized Winnipeg Jets hockey jersey, and a Rinkwater Nice Rink Rink in a Box, the industry standard for outdoor rink starter kits. The Man Cave has a $500 men's Burton Gear shopping spree from Alter Ego Sports. Pizza night for 10, courtesy of our friends at Boston Pizza. Two tickets for an upcoming UFC fight night December 16th at Bell MTS Place. A Winnipeg Jets guys night out, including two tickets to a Jets home game this season at Bell MTS Place. And a customized Winnipeg Jets hockey jersey puck party. And we're going to throw in a Rinkwater Nice Rink, Rink in a Box, the industry standard for outdoor rink starter kits as well. Select your cave of choice online right now at TSN1290.ca. We'll randomly draw a winner of each prize package on Monday, October the 30th. This is The Big Show on TSN 1290 and TSN1290.ca. Jim Toth, Troy Westwood, and Brandon Ruwicki. And we'll talk a little baseball. We'll get some NFL going, too. And, of course, we'll delve into the Jets roster with cutdown day in the National Hockey League today. 4 p.m. Central for all the teams, including the Winnipeg Jets. Brian Munn's also going to join us at the bottom of the Royal Sports Power Hour next. Gentlemen, before we get into the postseason, we'll start with Mr. Josh Donaldson addressing the media yesterday, saying that he told Blue Jays general manager Ross Atkins where he wanted to be, and it was right here. They had a face-to-face, and quote, "I let him know where I stand, and where I stand is I want to be a Blue Jay," Donaldson said. "I love Toronto. I love playing here. By the same token, I understand their side of it, and both sides have got to match. My first choice as of right now is I want to be here. I enjoy the city. I enjoy this team. I enjoy the people that are around here, and I just let him know that. I wanted to be up front before anything else came out there or something like that. Hey, this is where I stand, and I want you to know this. There was no talk about a contract or any type of dollars. It was just my feelings and letting him know where my heart is, and ultimately we'll see if anything can get worked out. He has one more year left. Arbitration is in play, and then he becomes an unrestricted free agent. The last I read was the St. Louis Cardinals are actively pursuing a trade for Josh Donaldson. Now, what do you think happens with Donaldson and the Jays now that their season is wrapped up?
Do not know what happens, but it was, I do, you know, as a fan of the Blue Jays, I do hope that he stays there, but also at the same time, if he were to get traded, you know that he's going to mire, right? Like, it's hard to imagine here where with all the young talent with the Yankees and where the Red Sox are at, the Blue Jays would look like they got a lot of work to do to sort of turn the corner. So you just kind of wonder if the next, you know, he's 31 years old, and you wonder over the next 4 years, are the Blue Jays going to be able to really make some noise here to allow him to sort of flourish and maybe go chase a championship? It might be kind of cool to watch him get on a team that has a good chance to do that as well. But from a selfish perspective, would love to see him in a Blue Jays jersey.
Yeah, I think he should stay in Toronto. But if this season has taught us anything, and I think it's maybe why this year was so frustrating to watch, is just pick a path if you're the Jays. Like, I honestly, to me, you could make a legit argument either way. Blow it up or try and make another run at this thing. Like, just pick one, though, because doing this waffle in between, well, I don't know, are we a contender, are we, like, any sort of, you know, confused path like that is just going to lead to failure. The Red Sox and Yankees, they're too good now. So pick one. Either try and battle them or rebuild and reload for 2 to 3 years from now. That's all I really care about here. If you sign Donaldson, they'd be aggressive this offseason and bring some more pieces in to help this team. But if you feel you're not there yet, then just, you know, really commit to a full, whether you want to call it a rebuild or a reload, go that path too. But just commit to one and stick with it.
Does either way not include Donaldson for you guys? Like, if you if you keep him and go really young with some prospects, do you keep him for that and have him around? And if you just reload, obviously you would probably keep a veteran like that. But he hit 270 this year, only played 113 games, and he had 33 home runs. I believe nobody in the American League hit more home runs after the All-Star break than Josh Donaldson.
That's right, yeah.
So does it affect it? Like, if you do go young, is he part of the process to do that, or do you keep him around if you go that way?
If you weren't going to keep him around, wouldn't you have moved him?
I don't know if you would have done it this year. Like, I think that you would wait for the offseason to get the... Because teams right now, like, if when the Cardinals were in the hunt, are they going to give you a ton of stuff that, you know... Like, look at the trades the Jays made. Hernandez with Astros getting rid of Liriano and stuff. It's all guys for the future. A lot of those guys weren't even called up.
You're just banking on a bigger return in
the
offseason.
I think if you're going to trade Josh Donaldson in the offseason, you're going to get one or two guys that can play now and then some prospects as well. I think if you did it in season, you're just getting prospects.
Yeah. I think you're maximizing the return on a Donaldson trade now. But I'd kind of be okay with them taking another run at it, to be honest. Just be like, you saw what he was in the second half and what he's been. He's an MVP candidate when he's healthy and when he's out there. And they have, you look at their pitching, you know, Stroman Sanchez is a pretty good top of the rotation right now. So,
yeah, and that's why, to me, like the blow up thing, I don't know that this team needs to be blown up, right? But you do wonder from the standpoint of Shapiro and Atkins, like, what is the plan?
Yeah, just give us a plan. Right? Give us a plan.
Yeah, it'd be interesting. The playoffs start tomorrow, by the way. Wild card game between the Twins and the Yankees. And then the wild card game for the National League is on Wednesday between the Rockies and the D-backs. Thursday, divisional series start with the Red Sox at the Astros and either the Yankees or the Twins in Cleveland, and it goes from there. We'll delve into more of the series itself and the wild card games on tomorrow's show. We'll take a break. Our predictions for the Jets roster as it is cutdown day, the National Hockey League, up next on the Royal Sports Power Hour on TSN 1290.
This is the Big Show podcast on TSN1290.ca. Catch the Big Show with Jim Toth, Troy Westwood, and Brandon Ruwicki. Weekdays 6 to 11 on TSN 1290.
TSN 1290 is proud to be a part of the iHeartRadio network. Download the iHeartRadio app and listen to us on all your favorite devices, or go to the Perfect Four section and choose from hundreds of channels to suit any mood or music taste. Your music, your station's always free. Download the iHeartRadio app and get streaming. The Royal Sports Power Hour on the Big Show, TSN 1290, Jim Tolt, Troy Westwood, and Brandon Ruwicki with you. Brian Munns, Jets analyst here on TSN 1290, going to join us at the bottom of the hour. Your NHL news and notes are still to come, and we're going to hear more about these roster decisions. I expect something to come out this morning. The Jets are going to practice at 10:30 today at Bell MTS Place, so it is closed to the public as they make final preparations for the start of the season. As soon as we get the news here on TSN 1290, we will be live with the news of the roster moves the Jets have. 29 players still in camp. They have to be down to 23 on the roster by 4 p.m. Central Time today. And then, of course, gentlemen, injuries could play into this as well, with Andrew Kopp being banged up on Saturday's game in Calgary, blocking a shot to his knee. Matt Hendricks is said to be a little banged up as well. Whether they're healthy enough to go will affect the roster as well. But let's sort of lay it out where, I guess, we think it will go, and then also you can mention if where we think it will go or where you think it will go, also what you would do if it's different from where you think it will go. So let's just start with the lineup. 29 guys have to get down to 23. Does that make sense? If you think it's going and you're going, put down where it's going to go and where you thought was gone and who will go when it's there. Does that make sense?
Sure.
Who do you think is going to be on the roster is what I'm saying.
Are we going to ignore the injuries?
No, you can put that in there. I mean,
we don't even know who's injured or to what degree, though.
Yeah, so just put it in where you would maybe put the roster in and what you think will happen.
Well, I think the fourth line is going to end up being Kopp, if they're all healthy, Kopp, Hendricks, Mathias. If they're all healthy, if everybody's healthy. And I think they send Patan back. And the two additional extra guys would be Dano and Tanev. This is what I think they're going to do. And I don't know how they're going to manage the whole situation on the left side. I keep hearing Kevin O talk and some other guys talk as saying that they seem bound to determine to keep like the whole – to me, it should be Ehlers, Scheifele, Laine, but it sounds like they're not going to be committing to that, and they're going to be more hooking up. Like possibly if you go Ehlers, Little, Laine – then it, to me, it makes a tough – like you're gonna they're going to put Connor on the top line. I have a little bit of trouble believing that. You know, and Perreault beside Scheifele and Wheeler, I don't – I'm not too crazy about that at all. So I just – I would really like to see Ehlers, Scheifele, Laine, and then Perreault with Little and Wheeler maybe, or Connor there, right, to have those two guys sort of take care of them defensively, and then Perreault on the third line. So I could see Connor playing with Little and Wheeler, but I can't see Connor playing – with Scheifele and Wheeler for some reason. Like, I just, how they manage that is totally up in the air to me.
You know, that's the interesting debate I heard Jeff Hamilton mention on the pregame show last week, and then we talked about it again on Saturday on the pregame show here on TSN 1290. Like, why load up the top two lines? Why not, you know, insulate some of the younger players with two vets? So, because you hear Paul Maurice talk about pairs all the time. So I want, like, Ehlers and Scheifele, or Ehlers and Laine together. I want Scheifele and Wheeler together, and then you put somebody in. And Jeff Hamilton of the Free Press brings up the point of, why not put, if you're going to have Kyle Connor on the team, put him with Scheifele and Wheeler. And if you're going to have a Patan or somebody younger on the team, put him with Little and sort of insulate the lineup as opposed to loading the top two.
Well, and I'm not, I don't disagree with that line of thinking at all, but the problem you run into is the fact that this team is married to Adam Lowry being their third line center. Mm-hmm. And that, it just, it creates a lot of matchup problems, right? Because we've talked all along about, we don't think Kyle Connor's game fits with what Adam Lowry does out there. And so now, like, you might be trying to spread the wealth a little bit, but who fits with what Adam Lowry does and what kind of a game that he has? Because you can't just put, you know, a Nick Patan beside them and expect positive things to happen, because their games just don't really mesh it all together. So that's the only, I mean, I don't disagree with that line of thinking. I think it's, you're seeing the majority of the top teams in the NHL do that have an abundance of skill, but with the way the Jets' lines are staggered and structured right now, I don't know if that's a real possibility at the moment. But I think that, for me personally, I don't know if you put Wheeler with Scheifele or Wheeler with Little, wherever. I think Wheeler's going to be with Scheifele, but I wouldn't mind having Connor kind of stapled next to Wheeler and be on that line to start off the season, because when I look at who's in that kind of top six-ish skilled players, to me, I think Connor needs the most, I guess, insulation. And Blake Wheeler, to me, provides that. Like, he can put basically anyone next to Wheeler and Scheifele and Wheeler and Little, and they're going to be just fine. I would probably look towards putting Connor in that spot. And like we said, even having a Lowry, Armia, Perreault third line, you know, then you still have a play driver in Perreault helping to work with Lowry and Armia in making that line, you know, more than just kind of a break-even unit that it was last year. I just think those lineups work out best, and then you can have the magic of Ehlers and Laine working together with whatever center you want to put them with.
And it should be with Scheifele. Like, the level of brilliance that can be attained on that line, it's an absolute shame if they're not allowed to go.
Scheifele, Wheeler, and Connor?
No. To me, if I'm going to have Connor in the top six, I'll put him with Little and Wheeler. It just... There's a defensive element to there that I like. Yeah, the Ehlers Scheifele line will be arguably the best line in hockey, and if not, it's going to be knocking, like, it's top three. You know, like,
be most exciting.
It's going to be remarkable to watch, and you owe it to the game to allow those three guys to flourish together.
You know what I like about Little, Laine, Ehlers, though, is what I saw with Little, and I know it was a 5-on-3 on Saturday, but just no thought process to maybe look at the shot or to look at the slot. He's going to feed these guys, and I love that idea, where Mark Scheifele is going to score more. And I like sort of the idea of having a guy as good as Brian Little feeding Ehlers and Laine than maybe Scheifele, who probably I want to shoot more than pass.
Yeah, I'm not sure which setup would be more. If you're looking, just speaking purely on who would be more beneficial to Laine, I feel like Mark Scheifele constantly looks towards where Lanny is, and I think they've had a pretty good chemistry in terms of him feeding them.
Complement one
another
beautifully.
Like would you think, if you had to pick either Shifley Wheeler or Little Ehlers as to what would be a better fit for Lanny, I think I might lean towards Shifley Wheeler.
To me, it's like breaking up Ulf Anders and Hull back in the old days, man. You don't break. Like, there's, let them go. And there's plenty, give them good solid 5-on-5 time. That's the focus of your top power play team as well, those three guys being together. It just equals brilliance and good luck stopping for it. And I think that the Jets have enough additional depth on that to do some decent damage as well.
With cuts due today, and we expect them this morning, but due by 4 p.m. Central Time for the National Hockey League and the Winnipeg Jets, we're discussing the potential lineup here on the Big Show, TSN 1290, 13 minutes past the hour. Now, besides shocking me with two aces in the same round this summer, Ken Wiebe of the Winnipeg Sun shocked me a little bit when he put out an article yesterday about what his prediction and potential lineup would be, and it has Matthew Perreault on the top line. Wiebe's put out Matthew Perreault with Shifley Wheeler, Ehlers with Little Laine, Connor Lowry Armia, Matthias Patan Dano, and that's because he has Kopp and Hendricks on injured reserve, and the healthy scratches would be Ben Schrott, Brandon Tanev, and J.C. LePond. Tucker Poolman would be going down to the Moose. And Patan and everybody else that he mentions, because he feels Kopp and Hendricks are going to be put on injured reserve. But what do you guys think of Perreault on the top line? Because I'm with you guys. I have Perreault on the third line, and it's no disrespect to Matthew Perreault. I think the idea of Connor with Lowry and Armia is to get some more offense out of Lowry and Armia, and because of their defensive game, to potentially help Connor. I get that. I like Perreault down there because although not as gifted offensively as Connor is, he's very good defensively, and I think he can still provide some offense with Lowry and Armia, but he also brings more grit and that sort of in-your-face kind of style that we're accustomed to on third lines. But Ken Wiebe has Perreault on the top line. What do you guys think of that?
What's Wiebe's top six again?
Perreault, Shifley, and Wheeler, and then Ehlers, Little, and Laine.
The reason I'm right there with I think all of us agree on the Perreault, Lowry, Armia. Perreault is gifted enough offensively to add to those two with Lowry and Armia to maybe push them over the hump to be more productive. And then also the defensive brilliance of Perreault can't be denied, and add that to what they want from Little, what they want from Lowry, what Armia already gives you. Like that really makes the third line, if it's Perreault, are Lowry and Armia, a wonderfully dynamic, potentially very impactful line. So having Perreault up there with Shifley, Wheeler, maybe, I suppose. But then on his third line, he's got Connor with Lowry and Armia. Wiebe does?
He has Perreault, Shifley, Wheeler, Ehlers, Little, Laine, Connor, Lowry, Armia, Matthias, Patan, Dano, and that's because he feels Kopp and Hendricks will be on injured reserve. Yeah. So the fourth line is Matthias, Patan, Dano.
I just feel like if we watch Connor out there with Lowry on Armia, I think that's a recipe for trouble. I think in two ways. I think it takes away from what that line should be from a defensive – or could be from a defensive standpoint, which is exceptional if Perreault's on there, and then it really – it puts Kyle Connor in a tough spot to truly be successful out there. I think from both angles, you're just asking for trouble and disappointment with that lineup.
Yeah, and I think that, not that Perreault is a bad fit there. I mean, that line would dominate basically every single night they're put together. But you don't need two play drivers on the same line. That's having Perreault and Wheeler there, it's you're kind of almost getting to the point of redundancy. Like you want to spread out your play drivers. You don't want to just stick them all on the same line. So late in the game, if you want to roll with your top six and you slot Perreault up there instead of Connor, I think that's something you can look at for sure as kind of your comeback top six. But yeah, I don't know if I'm going to get it out of my head that I think the best fit for that top nine involves kind of flip-flopping Perreault and Connor together.
So do you have Connor on the top line with Shifley and Wheeler?
Yeah.
Yeah?
Yeah.
Do you?
I would rather have Connor with Little and Wheeler because I think even defensively, like there's a little bit more that maybe Brian Little, it depending on the – I'm not sure how strong Kyle Connor is there, so I'm a little bit more concerned. And I know Brian Little and I know I'm covered with Little and Wheeler out there, and then just the to allow, I can't deny the gravity of the brilliance of the possibility of seeing Ehlers, Scheifele, and Laine out there. I think Connor's better isolated with Little and Wheeler, and I think the brilliance of Ehlers, Scheifele, and Laine is just going to be something to behold.
Defensively, this is the Big Show, TSN 1290. You know what? We'll take a break. We'll get into the defense when we come back, and we'll hear from Paul Maurice as well as we discuss roster cutdown days and what it would potentially look like Wednesday night when the Jets host the Leafs right here on the home of your Winnipeg Jets, TSN 1290.
This is the Big Show podcast on TSN1290.ca. Catch the Big Show with Jim Toth, Troy Westwood, and Brandon Ruwicki. Weekdays 6 to 11 on TSN 1290.
Welcome back to the Big Show on TSN 1290 and TSN1290.ca. Jim Toth, Troy Wester, Brandon Ruwicki with you. And at the bottom of the hour, Brian Muttons, Jets analyst, going to join us to talk about cuts, preseason ending, and the season starting on Wednesday night. NHL news and notes still to come in this hour. Next hour, we're going to talk some more football. Marshall Ferguson is going to join us, and some more hockey, Jonathan Davis. Now, on days like this, you never know what to say. There's been another mass shooting in the U.S. in Las Vegas, and it's already the worst mass shooting in the history of the United States. So we respectfully are temporarily suspending our Hockey Nights in Vegas contest today. We will not be taking qualifiers, and we'll move forward throughout this week and see when we will bring it back. But out of respect for the victims or families, and, of course, everybody listening who I'm sure is just stunned and shocked by the awful, awful news, we will be suspending that contest for today and for the foreseeable future. And I think it goes without saying that we are just, the three of us and everybody else, is just shocked as this morning has worn on. It's tough to be on the air when this stuff is happening, but we are a sports show, and we're going to continue doing what we do. I think that's important when these things happen personally. And that does not mean by any respect that we're not aware of it. It doesn't affect us as well as you. So we respectfully here at TSN 1290 will be suspending our Hockey Nights in Vegas contest at minimum for today and potentially moving forward this week. We'll keep you up to date. But out of respect for the families and the victims of what took place in Las Vegas last night, we will not be qualifying anybody today. And we hope you, the listeners, understand that. And understand that the reasoning why we're doing that.
Just absolutely horrible. We live in a real messed up world. No question.
So this is a sports show. We are aware of it. We do care. And we will move on respectfully this way and continue with our day here. But it doesn't mean that it's not in our thoughts and prayers going forward. So we'll move back on to the Jets. It is roster cutdown day today. As we said, they hit the ice to practice at Bell MTS Place at 10:30 this morning. We expect some decisions to come on the roster. But before we get to more on the defense and what we think will happen, here's Paul Maurice on roster decisions that have to come today.
Yeah, you don't get cut and never come back, right? And you don't make the team, you get to stay. It's a starting point. We have to get it to 23, and we'll do that. And injuries, I think, may play a factor in some of it, too. So it's just a starting point, yeah.
And also, Paul Maurice says, here's the plan for the next couple of days after an off day yesterday and the preseason wrapped up.
Lean it down to four lines plus a couple guys and get moving up and down the ice. We'll cover there's probably six things that we looked at really hard here, and we'll cover those. Be a little bit more of a grind on Monday, and we'll try to get a little back to speed. So the first day is going over the first week that we had. The second day will be the second week that we had, and drop the puck on Wednesday.
So there's head coach Paul Maurice on the roster moves, the preseason, and what their week will be heading into Wednesday's home opener, which you hear right here on TSN 1290, your home of the Jets against the Leafs. A special start time on Wednesday is 6 p.m. as well, so everybody with tickets to the game and who are going to be tuning in and listening to TSN's coverage, by all means, it's 6 o'clock start on Wednesday to kick off the season. Do you think anybody made the team? Like, do you think anybody impressed enough to sort of... If it was entirely healthy, did some guys do enough to just sort of push the envelope? And
I think it's real fair to say that there wasn't a single standout performance in preseason. Like, there nothing. Certainly from a forward perspective, there was no one that, as far as the young fellas go, there's nothing that popped off. And so when Palmieri says, yeah, it turned out as we thought, right, you can eliminate surprises. And if they thought Kyle Connor was ready to go, they'll have a give him a real good look. And, boy, you hope he walks through that door, right, and just can take another step here. But kind of a in that manner, maybe a little bit of a disappointment to some degree. Because, you know, you hope just for the team betterment, you hope that a guy like one of the fourth line, Dano, can come out and just establish it that much more. Or a Patan, even Connor. Like, you hope any one of those guys, those young guys sort of vying for one of these spots, could have come up and grabbed it. But arguably, nobody did.
Yeah, I never really thought of it in that sense, but you're right. Like, the jobs were just, maybe the jobs were more so handed out than they were won. Like, here you go, I guess. Right? Like, there wasn't a game where we came back the next morning and said, this was X player's statement game. This player jumped off the page all night long. It was, you know, he looked good for a bit. You know, Dano had flashes. Patan had flashes. Like, there was a lot of kind of bursts, but nothing real sustained over the course. Never mind two or three games, but really over the course of an entire game. Nobody really jumped off the page, I guess. So it's a little bit disconcerting that you didn't, you know, the jobs weren't really made easy in the sense of, well, this guy won a job, so we're going to have to find a way to keep him on the team. It's, I guess, the coaching staff just kind of what felt justified in their thoughts and their judgments from before training camp, because nobody made their life extremely difficult.
It was, I won't say funny, but when Kevin Olszewski on the pregame show asked Jeff Hamilton, Rick Ralph, and myself what we took, what was the most interesting part of camp, I said it was interesting that it wasn't very interesting. Like, there wasn't any, you know, we're not sitting here going, this guy made the team and then would they have to do something? It was sort of that way. Other than Tucker Poolman, I thought Tucker Poolman surprised me coming off surgeries. I know he's 24 years old, but he looked like he could fit in right away here, and I think he's going to be a key depth piece. But other than that, nobody really, you know, Tucker Poolman surprised me a bit, just given that, you know, the level of play that he was at consistently throughout all the games. He didn't really have an off game or struggle too much in my mind.
The one thing I wonder, defensive standpoint, is I wonder if they go Enstrom Buff instead of what a lot of people thought would be Kulikov Buff. And the only reason why I wonder that is because Kulikov has a little bit of that Buff element of wander in him a little bit. When I was watching that, I suppose if they just want Toby to, you stay home, take care of Buff, a la the old days. I wonder if they make, which way they go on that decision.
And Ken Weeb, going along with what he put out yesterday, feels it's Morrissey, Trouba, Enstrom, Bufflin, Kulikov, Myers in the bottom pair. So we'll talk more about the Jets with analyst Brian Munns from TSN 1290 next on The Big Show on the Royal Sports Power Hour, TSN 1290.
This is The Big Show Podcast on TSN1290.ca. Catch The Big Show with Jim Toth, Troy Westwood, and Brandon Ruwicki. Weekdays 6 to 11 on TSN 1290.
Back on The Big Show, TSN 1290 and TSN1290.ca, the Royal Sports Power Hour, NHL news and notes right around the corner. Jim Toth, Troy Westwood, Brandon Ruwicki with you. 33 minutes past the hour on cutdown day in the National Hockey League. Teams have to submit their rosters by 4 p.m. Central Time today. The Winnipeg Jets have 29 on it. They have to be down to 23 in injuries and everything else that may weigh into it. Welcome into the program, Jets analyst right here on TSN 1290, Mr. Brian Munns. How are you, Brian?
I'm good, guys. How are you?
Very well, thank you. Do you expect the announcement to come prior to 4 p.m. Central, probably sometime this morning?
The deadline's tomorrow at 4.
Oh, tomorrow.
Yeah. So they've
Sorry,
got,
I read that wrong.
Yeah, they've got the full day yet today to find out exactly how their players feel, and I guess obviously most notably, as you guys just played the clip there from Andrew Kopp and Matt Hendricks, who we haven't seen for a little while here. So, you know what, I guess there's really not a lot to report on that aspect because we got home late Saturday night and then the team had the day off yesterday. So a lot of curiosity going into practice back downtown today.
So given injuries, Brian, we might not hear till tomorrow.
Correct. Yeah.
Okay.
you know, I think we'll get a pretty good idea, though, on the line rushes, because the one thing that Paul Maurice has been really constant on in the last week of the preseason schedule here is he's wanted to get down to pretty much workable numbers and really wants to get the lines starting to match here, because those guys are going to want today and tomorrow to feel the puck and go through some things as trios there and be ready to go when Toronto's here on Wednesday night. So I would hope anyway that from his standpoint and from a workload standpoint, that when they step on the ice downtown today, that they're in their threes and we can get a bit of a read from that at practice.
Any level of disappointment at all from some of the younger fellas that you had maybe thought would come in and make a little bit more of a splash in training camp?
No, I think, Troy, because they were all that good. I think they really made it a hard decision this year. You know, there was nobody that you watched in games thinking, geez, this guy just can't play right now. And when you talk to a lot of the players, they all feel that they've done everything they can as well to make it. I thought Paul Edmonds did a great job. Just on every one of our pregame shows, he had one of those young guys on and kind of went in depth with kind of the mindset of those guys. And it hasn't been easy because all these guys have been around. They all feel like they fit in the organization. It's a tight group of players. So for the guys that aren't going to start the year, I would expect that the first week or so is probably going to be a little bit of soul-searching for those guys, like it always is when you don't get something that you really want to happen. But it proves, again, something that we've talked a lot about over the entire summer, is this club has really good depth for one of the first years that we can remember here. And the two guys that won't be around by the time we get to tomorrow afternoon is going to be tough for those guys, but they will all get NHL games this year just based on the fact that no one stays healthy for 82 games. There's going to be some injuries. I guess the one way you can look at it is if, then we're just throwing a scenario out there right now, that if Andrew Kopp and Matt Hendricks were injured right now, nobody would have to go. They could keep Brandon Tanev and Mark O'Dano or Nick Patan, and they wouldn't have to put anybody away to the Manitoba Moose. So, again, we won't know any answers on this until we get to practice today.
What are your suspicions about Andrew Kopp and Matt Hendricks and anybody else who may not be available come Wednesday night?
You know what? To be honest with you, we don't really know. Because, you know, I saw Andrew walking out of the Saddle Dome on Saturday night, and, yeah, he looked sore. There's no question about it, but you know, he wasn't on crutches or anything like that, so you would take that as a positive, but you just don't know. You know, the flight home is always hard on guys when things start to swell, and then, you know, how things react and what's going on, you know, inside their bodies, and they would have hopefully got that looked at either yesterday or today by the Jets doctors. So, again, it's hard to predict. You don't really know unless you're the player or the team, and injuries are obviously really tight-lipped at this time of the year.
Every once in a while, you'll see athletes do something, and it's truly breathtaking. And Patrick Laine is one of those guys. That first goal he scored there, Munzee, on the weekend was just truly remarkable.
It's funny. I talked to Glenn Gullitson after the game, the head coach of the Calgary Flames, and because the Jets and Flames played a couple of games there within about 4 or 5 days, and he was just marveling at what Laine can do on the ice. And he said the same thing that I said a couple times during the broadcast. He looks bigger on the ice than what he has in years past. It looks like he's a man already, and he's still only 19 years old. Like, you wonder what this kid's going to be like when he's 23, 24, 25 in his prime. But, yeah, that shot is pretty remarkable. And when you look at the end of the preseason here, he led the Jets with 5 goals, and he led the Jets with 8 points. And, yeah, he's a man to be reckoned with out there, and teams are taking note already for Patrick Laine. So it's fun to watch this kid on a daily basis with how much fun he has with the game, and then when he steps on the ice, just how darn good he is.
Given that training camp is wrapped up, or at least the preseason games have, Brian, where do you see the team having some improvement, or does that have to wait till the actual season starts?
I think it has to go when the season gets going, because first and foremost, injuries, and that's what really riddled the team last year. You would think they're a little bit more confident in goal this year with the 29-year-old like Steve Mason, who's coming into his 10th NHL season now. They probably feel better about their club just knowing they've got a guy that's been through a lot in his 463 games of NHL experience. You know, Connor Hellebuck had a spectacular preseason. He allowed 6 goals on 77 shots, which, if you break down the numbers goalie-wise, it's a 1.95 goals against average and save percentage of .922. Those are pretty good for your number two netminder, and he's going to have to be good this year if this club wants to get into the playoffs. And the games that he's given an opportunity to play, he's going to have to play well for the Winnipeg Jets this year. And I think that, to me, right now is probably the first area where they feel good about themselves, but there's no question, you know, they're a healthier team on the blue line with the likes of Tyler Myers and Toby Enstrom ready to go in their top six. You know, we all forget already Jacob Trouba wasn't here at last year this time. So he and Josh Morrissey have played extremely well in the preseason together. So there's a lot of good things this club's been able to work through over the last two and a half weeks that they should feel good about going into that first game here on Wednesday night.
The Tucker Poolman thing is interesting at his age 24, a right-hand shot. Sure, everyone sees him going down to the Moose, but he's not a young fella, so it's not like he needs a whole bunch of seasoning. Maybe, you know, however many games he plays down at the A or gets up for the Jets here. But the year after this, that right side of the Jets lineup is still going to be pretty congested, and you just kind of wonder, is there a possibility for him to bounce to the left line? Is something going to open up on the right side? The future with Tucker Poolman on the right side of his D is an interesting conversation.
Well, it sure is, and I think that's why we've seen him over the last couple of preseason games play on the left side, and it's exciting. It really is, and I think you're bang on with the fact that he's 24 years old. He had those 3 really good years at UND and was able to win a national championship and have success already in his hockey career without even stepping on the ice into an NHL game. And we talked earlier on about the forwards. Nobody ever looked out of place, or you didn't think that, geez, he's not quite ready to be here yet. Tucker Poolman's the perfect example of that on the blue line, because everybody else that he was on the ice with is a National Hockey Leaguer, and he looked like he's ready to play in the NHL right now during the preseason. So I give him a lot of credit with what he was able to do in the offseason for getting his 2 shoulders ready to go and it not being any type of a hindrance at all during the preseason, battling against men for the first time in his career during a 2-week training camp and the 6 preseason games that he was involved with. You know, he's shown that he's right there, and that's going to be a really curious decision here over the next couple of days as to which way they decide to go on that.
Brian Munns, Jets analyst here on TSN 1290, joining us on the Big Show on the Royal Sports Power Hour, 42 minutes past the hour. Brian, how's Tyler Myers been on and off the ice? And I mean that health-wise. Like, how has he been dealing with camp and being back at it after so long off the injury and everything else?
Yeah, he's been good. You know, there hasn't been any setbacks or anything like that that he's looked at. Had a really good talk with him on Thursday night or Friday morning. It was late in the week. It was before the Calgary game, and it was after the Wednesday night game, one of those off days there. And, yeah, he said he's excited about where he's at right now. And I think that's the best way that Tyler Myers can be going into this year. I know he missed a couple of games there in the midpoint of the preseason calendar, but it's a long grind for these guys. And for people that don't know, there's off-ice workouts, and then there's the on-ice, and you've got the games, and you've got the travel in on game day, and you're flying home if you were one of the lucky ones that got to go on the road, and you're not getting back in until 1 or 2 in the morning, and you're right back down at the rink by 8 o'clock the next day. So the last 2 weeks has been a grind for everybody, but Tyler has come through with flying colors here, and that's one of the good things that you look about, and you talk about that right side right now with Jacob Trouba and Dustin Byfuglien and number 57 there. That's 3 pretty good guys that I would put up against anybody in the NHL down that right side of their defense corps.
If you had to push your chips one way or the other, who do you see Kulikov paired with?
Probably Tyler to start the year, just based on the relationship and the continuity that Josh Morrissey and Jacob Trouba have been able to build this year. And then, you know, Toby Enstrom and Dustin Byfuglien have had a thing going for a long time, really dating back to their Atlanta days. And I think they're pretty comfortable when those two are on the ice that they can play. We'll probably see a little bit of mix and matching, but if I were to bet on it going into Wednesday night, I would expect that Kulikov and Myers would be together for sure.
And, you know, Brian, we're sitting here trying to figure out the roster and how it'll look and who's in, who's out, and where they're going to play on Wednesday. But the reality of it is even the top 2 lines are probably going to see some mixing up as the season wears on.
Yeah, they are, and that's something that we've seen. You know, Paul likes to have something going for a while, and then even in-game, if it looks a little bit off to him, you know, the perfect example over the last couple of days was, will Brian Little always center Nikolaj Ehlers and Patrick Laine? And kind of the joke inside the room was, as great friends as they are, sometimes you've got to get Ehlers and Laine away from each other for even a little bit of a hockey game because they get mad at each other, and you've just got to send them to one corner for a little while. So I think that's the way the season's going to start. I think Kyle Connor has earned himself an opportunity to start the season with Mark Scheifele and Blake Wheeler. We'll see that if that comes to fruition at practice this morning, but that's kind of the way I see the top six going. And the one positive for the team as well is you take a look at the schedule coming into this year, and it's a pretty good month of October for the team just based on the fact of back-to-back games and days in between when they've got a road trip or something like that. So they're able to work this club pretty good during the games. They'll be able to play them hard, but there's some pretty good recovery time in there, which is really big for players early on in the year.
Brian, we appreciate your time as always. You can follow Brian on Twitter at Brian Munns TSN, who'll be at practice today and, of course, putting lines out each and every day and where things sit with the Jets. Thanks for doing this, man.
Okay, boys, have a good week.
Take care, Munzie.
Brian Munns, once again, Jets analyst here on TSN 1290. We'll take a break and do your NHL news and notes next when we come back to the Big Show on the Royal Sports Power Hour, TSN 1290.
This is the Big Show podcast on TSN1290.ca. Catch the Big Show with Jim Toth, Troy Westwood, and Brandon Rewicki. Weekdays 6 to 11 on TSN 1290.
Welcome back to the Big Show, TSN 1290 and TSN1290.ca. NHL news and notes time with Jim Toth, Troy Westwood, Brandon Rewicki with you on the Big Show. Mr. Rewicki and, Mr. Westwood too. Winnipegger Nolan Patrick has made the Philadelphia Flyers opening day lineup, reported yesterday.
Does that surprise anybody? If the dude was healthy, we figured he'd make it, right?
Damn straight. I mean, there's a couple interesting things out of Flyers camp, actually, because Patrick is the number two center there. Mm-hmm. Because your top line in Philly right now is Couturier down the middle, and then Giroux on the wing and Voracek on the right side. So that's an interesting little top six there that I don't think anybody really saw coming going into camp, where now Nolan Patrick's your second-line center.
You think that helps Drew?
Yeah. I do.
Like as a rebirth almost?
Yeah, I think it's something definitely worth trying out too, and they looked really, really strong the last couple of games in the preseason. But it's been that's maybe the biggest problem in Philly. Not maybe, it is the biggest problem in Philly right now. Your $8 million man, his point production has plummeted basically each season over the past 3 or 4 years. So I think it's a move that you almost have to try at this point just to kind of maybe, you know, you're getting power play production no matter what, but if you can kickstart him 5-on-5, then your goal scoring problems kind of get solved pretty quickly.
Some of the players that haven't made the National Hockey League this year, at least out of camp, include the Edmonton Oilers, UC Pearl, Puljujarvi. And defenseman Mark Fain from the Oilers, and also Thomas Chabot and Ben Harper are sent to the American Hockey League in Ottawa. I thought Thomas Chabot looked really good for Ottawa against the Jets, and he, of course, had an outstanding World Junior tournament last year on the blue line for them.
Do we all remember the Puljujarvi talk?
Yeah. touch a bullet there.
Right?
He looked good in the preseason, though. I'm surprised he was sent down.
You know what? And so many people say that about Cheveldayoff and say, well, he lucked into a lottery pick. And I understand that. Like, you get that lottery pick, but you still have to make the decision. And there has to be some credit there for doing your due diligence and picking, you know, Laine over that whole
debate. But in fairness to that, it wasn't that the rest of the free world wasn't saying Laine's over Puljujarvi. It was the whispers here that they maybe held Puljujarvi at a higher level than Laine.
I didn't buy that. I thought if that was being coming out of Winnipeg, I thought that was some pretty good legwork being done. I mean, I don't know. Like, he looked good when he was playing on a line with Connor McDavid against the Jets, at least for a period.
Someone tweeted me over the weekend, if the Jets didn't win that lottery, that Line A would be beside McDavid now.
Yeah, because Edmonton would have.
Can you imagine?
Yeah, that's
just.
That would have been so
around
Edmonton.
That for yeah. a second, huh?
That is
we can't believe the fact that they can put Puljujärvi beside him in a year or two. They could have had how many would Laine score beside McDavid?
Throw in a Nail Yakupov if he was still on the team, and then you got something going, eh? Also in the news and notes, the Calgary Flames are in talk with a 45-year-old. It's not Westy or I. It's Mr. Jaromir Jagr is in talks with the Calgary Flames. I believe they have just over $3 million, or just under four, I should say, in cap space. Do you think this happens? He pulled himself from a game for the team that he owns in Europe on the weekend. Pulled himself. He didn't play. He was going to play there if he didn't get an NHL
That's
contract.
That's a way to guarantee yourself some ice time, though. Go play for a team you own. Where would he fit in with the Flames?
Right wing. They have a bit of a hole there. It's a eerily perfect fit, which is just fine and dandy for everybody.
I do hope so, just to watch him out there. It'd be neat. And to see the impact with those young fellas, like, the contrast is pretty cool.
Yeah. I can get down with Cowboy Jaromir Jagr. Like that.
What line, though, do you figure?
Yeah, I'm not so sure. Like, I don't know. Do you take Frölén off the top line and put him with Johnny Hockey and Sean Monahan?
I don't know. I don't mind it at all, and I think it could work in Calgary.
How does he keep up to those guys?
But yeah, I don't know who he plays with. Because
that's what they said last year with Barkov and Huberto, and the year before. Like, he doesn't need he kind of keeps up a little bit.
You guys go, I'll be right
there. Yeah, like you guys go up there. Once we get in there, I'll stick my ass out, and don't worry, I'll find one of you guys.
Can you guys hold the puck long enough for me to get there and then give it to me? And
we'll be all right. Frolik Lazar. Right? On their top three on the right side? It's just interesting what will happen.
Furland, Frolik, Brouwer, and Lazar are their right wingers. So Jagr's that's an upgrade. He's an upgrade over Brouwer and Lazar for sure. You know, I mean, you're not going to argue that. And Furland plays a completely different game, and he's kind of fun to watch. But, maybe you put him on the third line if you like the way Furland, Monahan, Gaudreau is, and you go with Versteeg, Bennett, Jagr. Kind of sheltered
that,
scoring line. That could
certainly
work.
Up the pull-up capabilities of that third line.
And this is also, we mentioned what's going on in Vegas and sending out our condolences and best wishes to the families and victims. But on Saturday night in Edmonton, what is being called a terrorist attack. Sunday evening is when Max Domi sent out these tweets. In Edmonton after the Eskimos game against the Bombers, a Somali refugee is facing a number of charges, including five counts of attempted murder, dangerous driving, and participation in terrorist activity after allegedly attacking a police officer and running over four pedestrians. Max Domi sent out some tweets, the son of Ty Domi, of course, in the Arizona Coyotes forward. Really hope everyone in Edmonton is okay. We're behind you. This is why we have to be aware of some of the people we let into our country. And he put up a Canadian flag. He then started getting some heat about that.
Jeez, yeah.
And I guess it goes to, you know, the response to Domi's tweet on Sunday was mixed, with many people challenging his views. An hour after his tweet, Domi put out a series of statements clarifying his stance. Quote, "The amount of people that turn what I said into something negative is exactly what's wrong with this world. Do you care if anyone comes into our country and causes harm to our friends and family? Seriously, let's have a conversation about this." And this goes back, I'll put it in the same category as the Penguins and the White House and everything else. The whole, I mean, athletes are people, and if they have views and they have stuff, but then you weigh into this stuff, and he's getting a lot of heat for this.
Yeah, well, and you got to be careful. I don't know how you lump this in with that sort of stuff, but you just got to be real careful how you share your thoughts, the words you choose and something like that, but absolutely horrible what happened in Edmonton for sure. And these are just crazy times. We just live in these horrible, crazy times, and you hope it's just crazy. What can you say about some of these acts that we see?
But do you mind him?
Well, I think you need to. Be
however
very
you take it,
how
do you mind him? Yeah, how you?
Yeah,
send
at least, yeah. I don't mind him saying anything at all. I don't know if I agree with the way he worded it, but. people are just frustrated at like it's just like a seemingly daily string of something awful happening. So he's a kid that's frustrated and probably scared. I don't really blame him for responding to what happened there. Without getting too political, maybe a bit more of a researched opinion might have helped him out in this regard.
And finally, we want to just acknowledge Dave Strader, a hockey broadcaster affectionately known as The Voice, passed away after battling bile duct cancer for more than a year. He was 62, Voice of the Stars. He started in the AHL with the Adirondack Red Wings, moved up to Detroit, also did Arizona work for NBC. I crossed paths with Dave a couple of times. I didn't know him very well, but he was very gracious and a great guy and basically a legend in the National Hockey League, 35-plus years calling hockey games, either on the radio or on television. So our best wishes go out to Dave Strader's family, and he will be missed around the National Hockey League. We'll take a break and talk some CFL next. Marshall Ferguson joins the Big Show on TSN 1290.
This is the Big Show podcast on TSN1290.ca. Catch the Big Show with Jim Toth, Troy Westwood, and Brandon Ruwicki. Weekdays 6 to 11 on TSN 1290. 1290.
Our province is packed with shining stars in the world of sports. Every week, TSN 1290 would like to showcase and reward these individuals who are making a big impact and difference in what they do. Nominate a Manitoban athlete, coach, or volunteer who is dedicated to making their sport matter. Every Friday on The Big Show, we'll showcase a Subway Sports Star of the Week and reward him or her with a $50 Subway gift card. Visit TSN1290.ca to nominate your sports star, and we could be featuring them very soon, including this Friday right here on The Big Show with Jim Toth, Troy Westwood, and Mr. Brandon Ruwicki. Don Vito Roundtable up at 11 with Kevin Olszewski, and of course the Gondola Pizza warm-up with Hustler at 2, and then Huss and Rick Ralph have the afternoon ride on the program today, and then it's Monday Night Football. Should be a good one. Washington Redskins are in Kansas City taking on the Chiefs, 7 o'clock right here on TSN 1290. We'll delve into week 4 of the National Football League a little bit in our next segment. But right now we're going to talk Canadian Football League. The Bombers are 10-3 and a dramatic game between the Hamilton Tiger Cats and the Toronto Argonauts went to overtime on Saturday. We welcome in Tiger Cats play-by-play man Marshall Ferguson. How are you, sir?
I'm good, guys. How was the weekend?
It was very well, thank you. Your thoughts on that game that went to OT and saw the Argos pull out a victory against the Tiger Cats?
The term that I was thinking about on the drive home after doing the post-game show was just that it was kind of emotionally exhausting. Like, there's been so many ups and downs as I've kind of tracked the season, talking to you guys every Monday about the way that this team has trended. And we went through all of the Art Briles stuff and the Johnny Manziel rumors and then Kolaros being in or being out and Ken Austin moving off the sidelines. There's just been so much that's happened that I feel like we've already played an entire season, if you know what I mean. Like, it feels as though there's been more storylines than you would have to week 15. And so when they play this game against the Argos, like, I love getting away from all of the storylines and just focusing on pure football. And it was so tough to do that with this game because there were some calls that went against the Tiger Cats that you might not like all that much. I didn't have a big issue with the calls themselves. I have an issue with the rules, including the pass interference call against Damon Washington with SJ Green. Then it really wasn't about the calls though that ruined the game for the Tiger Cats. I mean, they took a penalty where Jalen Saunders rolls out of his stance and goes offside in the back end of that game when C.J. Gable runs for a first down. Because they take that penalty, they're not able to convert. On the very next play, Jeremiah Masoli gets sacked. He fumbles. It gives the Argos the ball on the 10-yard line. They score a touchdown on the next play. Like, it's a snowballing thing that you get with a team that's not winning a whole lot of games. And when I was driving home, I'm trying to think, how do I encapsulate this? How do I actually talk to people here in Hamilton about this game and paint the picture of what is happening as an analyst? And it's really tough because, quite honestly, there's just like 5,000 things that happen in that game that you can try and weigh out the pros and the cons. And at the end of it, you're not really sure exactly which side has won that battle.
I tell you what, man, like if this call, and I'm going to tweet this out right away for anyone that missed it, but that if that's pass interference in that situation on Washington by S.J. Green, for Pete's sake, any receiver can run into a DB, just nudge sort of thing. I mean, that's just outrageous. And to miss the fumble with 9.5 minutes left in the fourth quarter. To me, that was probably the game there. Declan Cross fumble. No ref sees Samani Lawrence bat the ball out of bounds. And it's just like horrendous, man. I just don't understand, and especially in that Samani Lawrence situation, why command center can't come down and just... I've seen it before in the CFL where they basically stop to play in a review, although it's not like there's no challenge to it, but get the call right. How in the world can't they see that immediately at command center and communicate it somehow to the official? That's an atrocity, man.
Yeah, I'm with you on that, Troy. And my whole thing yesterday was I texted some people in and around the Argos, and they were saying to me, why are you so upset about the pass interference call? My whole thing is I'm not upset about the officials calling it on the field. That's not on them. That is on the command center to look at that thing and be able to actually parse out what the meaning of pass interference is. And like you say, if that is the meaning of pass interference, to reroute a receiver when he is moving down the field, really right as the ball is coming out or just before or just after the ball is coming out, if we're slowing everything down that much and we're going to try and parse those things out that happen a million miles an hour in a game, then that's just frustrating to me. Like, I'm not angry at the call. I'm angry at the way that the game is trending, because I know people that are sitting in the stands in Hamilton. I heard the boos. They looked up at the Jumbotron and they went, come on, that's like, he barely bumped him. He rerouted him for sure, but he did it by about half a yard, 15 yards down the field before the ball actually came out. And yet somehow when we slow it down, that's pass interference. So I'm with you on that. In terms of the fumble, I definitely think that that was a missed call. That is an on-field official issue, and that is a problem that you have, because you have to be able to make those snap judgments, especially when you're standing right next to the call. Like, you see the ball come out, you see it get tapped, and you have to be able to review and look at it and say, well, let's stop the game, as you're saying, Troy, with the eye in the sky, and be able to go, okay, did this actually get punched out? Did this go off Declan Cross's knee? Did it go off his hip? Did Samani slap it out? If that was a college game, something I used to play in, I would think that the officials on the spot would say that is a clear fumble, that is a clear punch out, and we don't know whether or not it tapped the Argos defender, but we know that the Tiger Cats tried to punch that ball out of bounds, which to me would suggest that they would go with the Tiger Cats having the football. The other one that really bothered me in this game was the no pass interference call against C.J. Gable, where he's trying to set up a screen and he basically gets tackled. Because there was no call on that, it was a first down play, I believe, in the first half. June Jones threw his challenge flag, which is great. He got the right call, but he had to waste his challenge flag on a call that just simply should have been made at that point in the ball game. Now the Tiger Cats are out of challenges. Now they can't challenge later on as to whether or not Samani Lawrence actually did tap that ball out of bounds. So, again, when I talk about that snowballing effect of a team that's struggling to find wins, having the officiating not help you out in any kind of way, that was frustrating. But the Tiger Cats didn't lose because of officiating. There were a lot of other reasons that they shot themselves in the foot. With that being said, the officiating certainly didn't help.
But, and that's getting back to, like, I know most fans who think the game drags on likes the limit of challenges, but we saw that in the Sunday Night Football game last night too, where Russell Wilson clearly scores a touchdown.
Yeah.
The official is right on the goal line, and Pete Carroll is losing his mind because he's like, now I'm going to get this call right. I've lost all my challenges, and you were right there. Like, the frustrating part of limiting it is coming to fruition in my mind anyways, and the fact that now you have to do it just to get the proper call when the proper call should be made.
And I really don't know what the answer is.
I don't either.
Because if you find the in-between happy middle ground, then you're trying to kind of parse both sides. But even if, let's say, we go from one challenge in the CFL to two, you're still going to have moments where people are going to go, oh, why are there so many stoppages in play? Why are we allowing them to review twice? And in different games, based on different situations, people are going to be saying, why do I have to waste my challenges here? And then they have no challenges at the end of the game when they actually need them. So my whole thing on this, guys, if I was a CFL coach, unless my team is striving to try and just come up for air, like we are just drowning, we're down by 14 in the first half and we need some form of life, I would save my challenge until the very end of the game, because you just never know when you're going to need to use it. Now, I know there's no point in going home with a challenge in your back pocket, but if you're only given one, regardless of how bad the call is in the first half, I just don't know if I can justify spending my challenge right now, because you have no clue what's going to happen at the back end of the game. And if you think it's going to be a close game like it was between the Argos and the Ticats, wouldn't you want to have that challenge with you? That's just my thinking. I know it's different for every team in the league, but every single game is different as well, where you cannot look at any one game and say, yeah, there should always only be one challenge available, or there should only ever be two challenges available, because based on the way the game unfolds, there's a different number of challenges that are required to, A, get the call right, and, B, appease both teams.
There are some Bomber fans here who think that the Bombers can maybe go challenge Calgary. I think that's a bunch of hogwash. When you're looking, Calgary's to have, for them to have played one more game and to have allowed 130 points less than the Bombers, that is something just stupid. But so fair to say Calgary's up upper echelon, standing on top of the mountain of the CFL, but have the Winnipeg Blue Bombers established their own tier sitting in second spot?
Yeah, absolutely. That's where I was going to go with this, Troy. You read my mind. I think that they are the second best team in the West right now, and I don't think that that's going to change a whole lot through the remainder of the season. I love what they're doing out there in Winnipeg. I'm looking forward to seeing the game out there coming up on Friday night because it's a team that I thoroughly enjoyed watching in person last year when they came in. It was my first time calling games for the Tiger Cats last season on TSN 1150 Hamilton, and I got to see Paul Appelisa's offense in person. And when you see an offense in person, you just get a better sense for the tempo that they can play with. And that was 2016. This is 2017. That turbo package, that cheetah package you guys talk about in your postgame show, that has just gotten that much better this year. And seeing them this year, it was a joy to watch offensive football played at a high level because, as we know, at that point in the season when Winnipeg came into Hamilton earlier, the Tiger Cats were not playing good offensive football. So it was refreshing to see that in person, even though it wasn't the Hamilton Tiger Cats that were running it. I like what Winnipeg has done on offense, but I think their defense is so underrated too. Their defensive secondary, I know Taylor Lofton's not having the great year that he did last year, but people are still very much aware of him back there. And I think that you can see some play calling differences when you watch a team like Edmonton play against Winnipeg versus if they were to play against Hamilton, where, you know, against Hamilton, they'll take shots down the middle of the field because they think they can move Courtney Steven with the quarterback's eyes. But Taylor Lofton, there's not a whole lot of shots that are right down the middle of the field because people know he's a sledgehammer, and he's got a lot of range. He can cover a lot of ground. So I think they've done a good job of building their national depth in Winnipeg. I like what they've been able to create out there, and they're playing with a high tempo on offense when they want. That's what they need to do to be able to stay in that second tier. And then who knows, man? I mean, if you look back early in the season, we all remember that game where Calgary went into Winnipeg, and if it's not for a Matt Nichols interception on one of those run-pass options where he sticks in the belly of the running back Andrew Harris and tries to throw a slant, if that's not picked off and goes back the other direction, that was a ball game in the fourth quarter. Anybody can beat anybody on any given day, just like we saw in the Grey Cup last year. If there's a West final and it's Winnipeg in Calgary, I mean, yeah, that's a really tough place to play. That is the toughest place to get a win in the Canadian Football League. But it's one game, and you've got a battle-tested head coach. You've got a ball-control offense. You've got an offensive coordinator who can design a great game plan. You got a defense that can strike, that can play physically with a Jerome Messam in the running game with their linebacker play. I think they're more well-matched than we realize at this point.
Tiger Cats play-by-play guy Marshall Ferguson on TSN 1150 joining us here on the Big Show this morning, TSN 1290. It's 15 minutes past the hour. June Jones has come under criticism for some of his decisions that he wanted to make, and rightfully so, but how much credit does he deserve for, I know they lost the game, Marshall, but you know, the last five or six games under his helm, how much credit do you give him for the decision he's made with Mazzoli and just everything else with the offense and the defense and how things are going for Hamilton?
I'll say this. I think the term culture is greatly overused in football and in sports in general. I don't really believe that it factors in as much as we act like it does, but the culture with the Tiger Cats, as soon as June Jones came in, it became relaxed. And I don't know if that is addition by subtraction with Ken Austin being off the sidelines or if that is addition by addition with June Jones stepping onto the sidelines. But when I watch the Tiger Cats sideline in-game, there's no longer this tension. There's no longer like this underlying simmering anger that's just kind of flowing throughout the sideline with people being upset and walking away from each other. And it's very much more a low-key sideline. And honestly, guys, if you actually watch the sideline for the Tiger Cats in-game, June Jones is as calm as can be on the sideline. Like, that guy loses a challenge, or he gives up a big touchdown, or there's a fumble or a bad interception, his face does not change. Like, I admire the man. I wish I could go through life like that, where I wouldn't get upset about things that were detrimental to the success of whatever you're trying to accomplish. He stays the same the whole game. Jeremiah Masoli, when he wins football games, as he's done over the last while for the Tiger Cats, like even Labor Day or the other games that he's won as of late in Ottawa, he does not look, act, or seem any different than when he loses games. Jeremiah Masoli, I think, personally, is tied at the hip of June Jones. I think that they understand each other. Jeremiah Masoli is the type of quarterback that June Jones likes to work with in his offensive system. I think there's a lot of credit to go to June Jones. Yes, the X's and O's. Yes, the offense when it came in. It's not a true run-and-shoot, but it is a different style of the run-and-shoot stuff he's run in the past at Hawaii and SMU. But Jeremiah Masoli is feeding off of the calm that has come from June Jones. And those two guys being the leaders of your team, as we know, head coach and quarterback, always going to be the leaders. When they're calm and they're under control and their demeanor doesn't change from win to loss, all of a sudden when you lose a game in the way that they did against the Argos this past week, your team doesn't completely collapse because it feels like it's the end of the world. They're just going to show up to work today, watch the film, get better from it, and move on. And I think that that's the biggest positive that they've got from June Jones coming in.
Marshall, great stuff as always. Thanks for doing this and have a great week. We'll probably see you around on Friday.
Excellent. Looking forward to it, guys.
Thanks so much, Marshall.
Thank you.
We'll take a break here on the Big Show and talk some NFL Week 4 when we get back on TSN 1290.
This is the Big Show podcast on TSN1290.ca. Catch the Big Show with Jim Toth, Troy Westwood, and Brandon Ruwicki. Weekdays 6 to 11 on TSN 1290.
TSN 1290 and Not Auto Corps present the Blue Bus. Before every Winnipeg Blue Bombers home game this season, we're taking W fans to Investors Group Field in our Not Auto Corps VIP Blue Bus. We'll pick you up and drop you off at the Not Auto Corps VIP tent to tailgate before the game. Then after all the football action, take you back to wherever you started. Prize includes 6 tickets to an upcoming Blue Bombers home game and free transportation to and from. Enter to win now at TSN1290.ca. Jim Toth, Troy Westwood, Brandon Ruwicki with you. 21 minutes past the third hour here. Boss Pizza Fan Line going to be open at 9 o'clock. Take your calls on the Jets rosters. Lots of tweets from people who are looking where they would put the lineup in and where it will go. Practice 10:30 today at Bell MTS Place. We'll have more in the lineup and where the everybody's playing at today after today's practice, of course, here on TSN 1290. Cutdown deadline is tomorrow at 4 p.m. Some teams have already announced or sent some guys down to the A. We're waiting on the Jets, and I presume they're waiting on some injuries to Andrew Kopp, Matt Hendricks, before they make some decisions. Let's talk NFL, guys. Week 4 in the books. The Patriots lost.
Cowboys lost.
Atlanta lost. Cowboys lost. How are we doing the six-pack? I was 1-1. Atlanta didn't come to fruition.
We went 4-for-6. Wicks was 2-0. You and I were 1-1.
I beat that Chargers-Eagles spread of 0.5 by winning by 2 points for the Eagles. So, hey, let's start there. It sounded like a home game. It's a 30,000-seat soccer facility the Chargers are playing in. It was not sold out. They actually had tarping on the upper deck. They can't get 30,000 people to watch the Chargers. And then the people that were there were mostly Eagles fans. Phillip Rivers saying after the game, we didn't have to use the silent count, but it wasn't the greatest. It did feel like a road game. Why did this happen again? Because they don't want to build a stadium in L.A., but... I mean, that's just to me.
It's not going to last very long. Whatever this whole thing in Los Angeles, this just isn't. The mayor himself came out and said that they didn't want two teams, sort of thing. So this is stopgap measure at best. You just kind of wonder what the future holds.
Is this the craziest start to a season you've seen with the parity? And I know, and you rightfully so say that, you know, we don't know anything till week 6, basically, or sometimes week 4. But week 4 has come and gone. The Patriots lost again. The Jets have 2 wins. You know, we could go on and on with some of the upsets that took place, you know, over the weekend. Dallas losing. What are your thoughts on week 4 in the NFL so far?
I think my biggest surprise is that the worst defense in the NFL belongs to Bill Belichick and the New England Patriots. Every quarterback is thrown for over 400 yards against them. They've surrendered. Like right now, they are allowing 456.8 yards per game, 324 through the air, and 133 on the ground. That's your New England Patriots. And I don't know how you recover from that. You know, some people saying Belichick have this figured out by Halloween sort of thing. I don't know what can you do. You know, if you got a mid-pack D, you can figure it out. But when you're surrendering 450, like the next closest worst D to them is Indy at 396. And the Patriots are giving up 456. So that to me is the one biggest thing that pops off like, holy cow. Hey, Tom Brady, you're going out there knowing damn well you got to score 30, 35 points to win. Things could be changing, in that division somehow, shockingly, right? For real.
Well, and New England's real, real fortunate not to be 0-3 to start the season at home.
Yeah.
Because Houston had the game in the bag, and if Bill O'Brien would have went for it on 4th-and-1 or 4th-and-inches and he gets that, then we're talking about a Patriots team that's in third. Or they would be last in the AFC. They would be last in the AFC.
Even on that game-winning drive, man, they
dropped the pick,
Brady,
too.
The sack strip, it bounces up into the old line, and also the interception that was dumb, but the dude couldn't hang on. Like, there was like hands of God were involved in that final drive there for Brady.
Yeah, it's I agree with you. And so, but I'm watching a lot of the analysts yesterday, and they're saying, well, if there's one guy that can fix it, it'll be the Patriots. I don't know. Like, I don't. You're talking about a couple of trades, and you're also looking to find a couple guys. Like, I don't know if they can fix that, even though it's Bill Belichick.
It doesn't matter. Like, there's not one weakness, right?
Yeah, they're that's
getting,
the problem.
Getting their fannies ripped off on the ground and getting their faces ripped off in the air. It's just a mess.
You guys believe in the Rams this year? 3-1? They were 3-1 last year at a certain point.
And they're kind of... I think the biggest difference is Goff, right? Like he's steps he's taken, he's opened things up there for the offense. Their defense, though, still suspect. They've given up 105 points against in the four games, so still little concerned with the defense there.
But yeah, the which you wouldn't have thought. It's gone a complete opposite there, and so they have the highest scoring offense in the league and the worst scoring defense in the NFC. But I expect those two things not to necessarily reverse, but I don't think the Rams will be the highest scoring offense, but I think their defense will tighten up. I think they're a certain playoff contender. I wouldn't shock me to see them win the division either, just because of the Seahawks and Cardinals are 2-2, but can you talk about two more unimposing 2-2 teams? Yeah, the Seahawks were tied with the Colts late in the third quarter. The final score did not at all reflect what happened in the first three quarters of that game.
You know, one thing I freaking can't stand, I hate it, is our athletes. I really like Cam Newton. I've liked him since Auburn. He's such a phenom, and to watch him play is a lot of fun. But I can't stand athletes after the win here when he's, you know, saying to the media, "Oh, you didn't want to talk to me before, and so why you want to talk to me?" That whole "woe is me" thing by athletes that are getting criticized, and then they have a good game, and then they start calling out the media for speaking truthfully about how much they were struggling before. I can't stand athletes like that. Shut up. Do your job. If you're not producing, you're going to get criticized. Be a big boy about it.
Jay Cutler handled things well in England over the weekend. At least his temper didn't get the better of him again. And finally tonight, Washington. We got a break, but Washington's in Kansas City. Who do you guys have? I got the Chiefs.
Yeah, I'll go KC at home as well. Yeah, it should be a good game.
Yeah, I don't know if it's going to be a good game. I think Kansas City takes it pretty handily.
I got Washington beating the spread, though.
Spread?
It's something like 3.5. I'll look it up. But
I'll take KC all day on that.
We got to take a break. I'll have it for you when we come back. And Jonathan Davis from West Coast Hockey next on The Big Show, TSN 1290.
This is The Big Show Podcast on TSN 1290.ca. Catch The Big Show with Jim Toth, Troy Westwood, and Brandon Ruwicki. Weekdays 6 to 11 on TSN 1290.
Back on The Big Show, TSN 1290 and TSN 1290.ca. Jim Toth, Troy Westwood, Brandon Ruwicki with you this morning, 32 minutes past the hour, 28 minutes away from the Boss Pizza fan line to be open. Your thoughts on the Jets roster and where they might be leaning? What do you think opening night, which is in two sleeps when the Toronto Maple Leafs come to town to kick off the season with the Winnipeg Jets on the Boss Pizza fan line? Your thoughts on what the roster will look like? The Bombers are 10-3. Get your impressions of that as well and everything else that's going in and around the sports world. This next segment is brought to you by Olympic Building Center, and it is with our good friend from West Coast Hockey, Mr. Jonathan Davis. Jonathan, how are you?
I'm doing all right, gentlemen. How are you?
We're doing well. Thank you very much, and thanks for taking some time today as well. Preseason has wrapped up. Anything on the West Coast stand out to you that maybe surprised you throughout this preseason or maybe didn't surprise you?
You know, I think that, you know, not necessarily surprised, but, you know, I like what I saw in Las Vegas. You know, I think for the fans out there, they had some games that, you know, were very encouraging. You know, they had, what, the eight-goal outburst against Vancouver. So, you know, and to see what the attendance marks were like for the preseason games, I think it was 17,000 for their game a couple of nights ago. So those are nice things to see.
The Kings players are talking about there being a more relaxed atmosphere under this new regime. Your thoughts on the maybe the new culture trying to be created?
Well, there is definitely a new culture that's trying to be created. And, you know, yeah, after talking to players, you know, following their game last week against Arizona, yeah, that was definitely a sentiment you heard from more than one player. And, you know, I think that's, you know, what John Stephens is trying to do with this team is to allow these guys to take advantage of their offensive skills and it's also to be able to make a mistake and not feel like, you know, you may be riding the pines for, you know, a couple of shifts. So there's definitely a difference in attitude, whether it makes them a better team. You know, there's still, I think, some talent issues that, you know, we're waiting to see guys like Adrian Kempe if they can take that next level. But there's definitely a much more relaxed feeling in that room.
Jonathan, what do you expect from the Ducks this year? Are they a playoff team? Are they a cup contender? Are they out of the playoffs? Where do you see them going?
Well, I expect them to be both a playoff team and the question just remains, guys, is, you know, being able to weather the storm of the first couple of months and the injuries to Kessler, Vatanen, and Lindholm. And if they can weather that storm, there's no question they are as deep as anybody in the league. And I think that, you know, Randy Carlyle has talked about the fact that, you know, it's time. I mean, the window is definitely closing. You know, there's no question that there's that realization with Getzlaff and Perry and Kessler all being products of the 2003 draft. So, you know, we're talking about guys in their 30s. So, but there is definitely, you know, there's no question this is a playoff and, more importantly, a cup contender, no question about it.
Lots of talk right now about Jágr and the Flames talking. Jonathan, how do you think he might fit in with Calgary?
Well, I think that, you know, what that tells me, guys, is that if they're looking at Jaromír Jágr, it's telling me that there's still at least one hole in their lineup that they've got to go to the aging veteran. So I you know, that would be the biggest concern for me with Jágr in the lineup. And, you know, look, this is a guy that I think is great to have in the room, no question about it. I think that he'll it's a lot of excitement for the fans as well. But the biggest concern for me is that really what's happens after game 82, because Jágr's got no goals in his last 28 playoff games and just one in his last 39. So, you know, really, what are you bringing him in for?
Wow, that's quite a stat, man.
Yeah, and that's interesting because even in the summer we were debating on whether you bring him in here or where he would go or what he would do, and I just, cap-wise and depending on the cost and everything else, I just don't see it's a fit, and I honestly think he's really slow now in today's NHL.
Well, he is. I mean, there's no question that he's not going to be a speed burner, and I think that there are a lot of things that he can still do in the regular season, but Calgary's talking about playing him in a bottom six role, and I'm sure it would also include some power play time. And so, yeah, can he contribute, you know, 15 goals? Sure. But I would, again, if you're bringing him in, it's telling me that you don't have a younger guy that can do the same. And I think that maybe that's a little disappointing. When you go around the league and you see how many vets who all came in on PTOs, and I don't think, I'm not sure if, I can't think of one guy who was signed who came in on a PTO this year. So that's all, you know, that's telling you where the game is going and or continues to go. And that's why, you know, when I look at Calgary, you know, kicking the tires on Jágr, I'm just surprised they don't, you know, they waited this long because they've obviously said that, hey, we just don't have a younger player right now that can be more effective. And that, to me, is a little troublesome.
Jonathan, do the Blues have the depth organizationally to survive the injury bug that's bit them, or are you going to write them off like a lot of people are?
Well, you know, the injury bug is I don't know if the injury bug was the deciding factor in me writing them off. You know, Brayden Schenn, adding Brayden Schenn to the lineup gives them another strong center, but they still don't have that number one center. You've got, you know, you've got two number twos in Schenn and Paul Stastny. But I'm just, you know, and Brayden Schenn was a power play specialist, at least in Philadelphia. I just don't like this team. I think that there's still something missing. You've got an obviously dynamic player in Tarasenko, and you still have a very strong back end. But I just think that down the middle, I just don't think that they're strong enough to compete with the best on best come, you know, the Stanley Cup playoffs.
What do you expect from Steven Stamkos this year and the season he could have?
Well, I think that, you know, we should expect, you know, a 40-goal season from Steven Stamkos as long as he can stay healthy. And, you know, that's always been the big question. There's always some sort of injury that has cropped up, and that's the biggest concern. But, God, you know, there's no question that at his best, he is by far one of the top 10 players in the game. And so, yeah, I would expect, you know, a 40-goal season. And you look at that Tampa lineup, and I think this is the team that's going to win the Atlantic Division, and it's going to be led by Steven Stamkos.
Pick a team, JD, East or West, that makes the biggest improvement from a point standpoint this year.
Well, I think it's going to be, you know, Dallas seems to be the sexy pick in that regard. I mean, you know, when you look at the people at Bovada or Bodog, they had them improving by 19 points. I think that was the biggest jump this year. You know, Carolina's another team in the East that you could look at, but the problem for Carolina for me is that they could still improve a great deal. I just don't know if they're going to be better than Pittsburgh, Columbus, and maybe Washington. Like all the divisions, they're all very tough. I just don't know if they still got enough to push them over the top. But a lot of that rests with Scott Darling. And if Scott Darling can be what Cam Talbot was to Edmonton, then maybe they are the team in the East that has the biggest jump.
Jonathan Davis from West Coast Hockey joining us this morning on the Big Show, TSN 1290, as we're days away from puck drop on the regular season once again. Who's the best Canadian team in your mind?
Best Canadian team. It's going to be the Edmonton Oilers. I still think it's the Edmonton Oilers, and Toronto's, you know, not far behind. But I think that I think Edmonton is still the best of all the Canadian teams at this point in time.
All right. Well, we'll sit there with that. That's the debate going on in Canada right now. We heard it on TSN, the reporters yesterday.
And what was the consensus?
Well, they were the same. Before? They were the same. Like, there's so many people so heavy on not only the Oilers but winning the Stanley Cup. But they said Toronto's a close second. And then the debate went on to, you know, there's the Winnipeg, there's the Calgary's. A lot of people don't think Ottawa can return to the playoff, especially without Carlson at the start of the season. Then there's the question marks around Montreal, and that's all over the map up here in this country on whether they are, you know, three of the last 4 years, 100 points, but yet what are they going to get done this year? So that is a consensus that the Oilers are the best, Toronto's a close second, but yet most of the other Canadian teams like Calgary, Winnipeg could see some massive point improvements.
Yeah, I don't think that Calgary. I don't think Calgary will see a massive point improvement because I don't think that they're significantly better than they were last year. I think Winnipeg has the potential to have that, you know, to take that next step. Everything's still, you know, to me the big question is goaltending, and you know if Steve Mason can and Connor Hellebuyck can be significantly better of what they had last year. Then yeah, they could be that third best team. I think that in Montreal's case, hey, they've got, you know, arguably the best goaltender in the world, definitely one of the top two or three goaltenders in the NHL right now. So look, I don't see a massive drop-off in the Canadiens. I think they may be better than most people think, and I think during the regular season, guys, I think they'll be able to survive the issues that we're all concerned with down the middle. Their big question, though, is still on the back end.
Do you have four teams from the Central and the Pacific to make the playoffs?
Yeah, I do. I do because I think I still think you're going to have Chicago, Nashville. Well, let me backtrack on that. I think it's so bunched up between those seventh and eighth spots, between Calgary and St. Louis, and San Jose, that it wouldn't surprise me, guys, if there was 5 and 3. Because I just don't think there's a grave difference between the two. So it wouldn't shock me if we had 5 from one of the divisions, because I think they're only going to see, you know, maybe a 1 to 3 point difference between those 7, 8, and 9 teams.
It's going to be fun.
Yeah, it is going to be very interesting. Jonathan, right before we go, we'll a somber note today across North America, of course, but also yesterday in the hockey world with the passing of Dave Strader.
It's truly a loss to, well, a huge loss, obviously, to the Strader family, a huge loss to the hockey community. You know, the one thing that I'll always remember about Dave, and I met him so many times, but, you know, just when I was first starting out in the business many, many years ago, he was just such a welcoming person, and you know, he just made you feel like no matter how you were a rookie, but he made you feel like a veteran. And just a classy, classy guy. And that's what I'll remember most about Dave Strader.
Well said, Jonathan. We appreciate your time as always. Thanks for doing this. We're days away. Enjoy the start of the season.
Take care, boys. Have a good one.
Thanks so much, JD. Take care, man.
And this segment was a presentation of Olympic Building Center. Visit their design center today or online at olympicbuildingcenter.ca. Build with confidence. We'll take a break and tee up the Boston Pizza fan line next on The Big Show, TSN 1290.
This is The Big Show podcast on TSN 1290.ca. Catch The Big Show with Jim Toth, Troy Westwood, and Brandon Ruwicki. Weekdays 6 to 11 on TSN 1290.
Fifty-one minutes past the hour on The Big Show, TSN 1290 and TSN1290.ca. Jim Toth, Troy Westwood, Brandon Ruwicki with you on a Monday morning, and the roster deadline for finalization in the National Hockey League is tomorrow at 4 p.m. Central. Jets practice today. Bell MTS Place at 10:30, and we expect to get some news and see what the lineup may look like as they have two more practices before the puck drops right here on your home of the Winnipeg Jets. So Wednesday night at 6 o'clock, special start time at 6 p.m. for the kickoff to the 2017-18 season. Leafs and Jets, of course. The Jets finished the preseason with a 2-3-2 record after a 3-2 shootout loss in Calgary on Saturday. Andrew Kopp blocked a shot and had to leave the game early. Matt Hendricks is banged up, and no word yet on the status of his health as we get prepared to start the season. But your thoughts on the preseason, gentlemen, and where you think the roster is going to go come Wednesday night?
Preseason was fun. Thankful it's over, though. And we're saying a little earlier, when you look at the offensive side, who that was vying for one of those bottom six spots popped off the ice, and I dare say nobody did. Kyle Connor didn't, Patan didn't, Dano didn't. The long list of the players that were there, nobody popped off the ice there. Really made a hardcore, big time statement. Tucker Pullman made the strongest statement of preseason, I dare say, and we all know where he's headed sometime soon as well. It was great to see Connor Hellebuck play at a nice level. Hopefully that maintains itself going forward. But by and large, to me, from a forward standpoint, and Brian Munn said, well, they all played so good that I didn't find that all either. It's just it was a bunch of blah from the hopefuls for the bottom six for the Jets, and I'm not so sure that there's an answer or a question that's really been answered at the end of preseason from that bottom six with the young players.
Yeah, the bottom six is still a jumble. I think maybe the most positive development in training camp is that Patrick Laine looks like he's reached another level. And my Lord, what does that like?
And along with maybe Nick Ehlers as well, right?
Yeah. Hey, Ehlers quietly went along with a point a game plus preseason. But I don't know, boys. Like, if are we talking 40 goals as the new floor now for Patrick Laine? Because I was like, I've just been kind of trying to hold back a bit, but you see the goals he scores, and it's they're so out of this world. And there was a lot of his rookie season that didn't seem to be repeatable. When you look at how far his average shot distance was and what his percentage was. But if he shoots the puck a bit more and gets a bit closer and even just incrementally improves on some of those things and the percentage comes down a bit, I don't know. Like, you see the move he made on that one goal.
Yeah.
And I find it real hard to look at that and think, that's not a 40-goal scorer this year. That's kind of the minimum. You know what I mean?
36 last year? What, how could we not think he's going to get 40?
I was going to say, isn't it 50? Because that's just four more. Like, I would presume he's going to get four more.
Well, because the reason I say that is his shooting distance average was one of the worst in the league. Like, around names that would be typical fourth liners and players that have a 17-plus shooting percentage usually see those numbers decline drastically the following year. Like, Jordan Staal is a great example of that, who scored 30 in his rookie season. He's not even come close to that since then. People would have assumed...
Jordan Staal didn't have a handful of guys around the league saying, that's the best shot I've ever seen in my life.
I'll give you that one. Yeah.
Jordan Staal. Who's on this team? What's your lineup?
I don't know. Like, when I hear Paul Maurice say, there's no surprises, and I'll just disregard the injuries. It's to me, if there's no surprises, the fourth line, if I had to pick what Paul Maurice is going to decide on here, with no surprises, I'm going to say the fourth line is going to consist of Kopp, Hendricks, and Mathias.
Yeah, I don't like it, but it's hard to argue against that.
And, I mean, the same way.
The one thing that would really, really upset me is if Brandon Tanev makes this team over someone like Marco Dano. Yeah. Nick Batan, at this point, it seems like his decision is kind of sealed and shut, but I don't know any of the guys on this team that Brandon Tanev should be ahead of, to be totally honest with you. And looking at guys like even J.C. LaPonne and Brendan Lemieux, I'd rather give them a chance over Brandon Tanev at this point.
It's going to be interesting. What does your Jets roster look like as we head into the final two practices prior to the season starting Wednesday night right here on TSN 1290? Bombers beat the Eskimos 28-19. They're 10-3 on the season.
Who'd have thought that? I mean, holy smackers. I didn't expect the Bombers to stroll into Commonwealth and win. I said if it happened, it would be tremendous. And they did it, right? Arguably their best defensive display this year. And the offense just came sort of chugging along. Andrew Harris is an absolute beast. Matt Nichols looked real sound and smart. It's just what you're getting week in, week out here with the offense. It was phenomenal. And now I think pretty much right across the nation, people are holding Calgary number one alone. And now the Bombers are, bam, in that second spot, just alone, sitting there. And then you've got sort of a messy thing below that with Edmonton and Saskatchewan and BC sort of muddled up in there. And then whatever the travesty is still out east here. But for the Bombers to be just nice and solid with the defense improving, good days to be a Bombers fan.
Yeah, that to me, that's the most positive, promising way they could have won that football game. You don't have to buy into the defense just yet, and I don't think you should either, but that's the one thing that's kind of holding them back from potentially, you know, if they're able to get to a Western final, the defense is the one thing holding them back from giving Calgary a real game. And if that defense improves, even to the point of giving up, you know, 23, 24 points a game, all of a sudden it gives the team a real, real good fighting chance if they're able to get to Calgary.
Jets, Bombers, NFL, MLB's wrapped up. Josh Donaldson wants to stay a Blue Jay. Anything and everything coming up from you on the Boss Pizza Fan Line, 780-1290, when we come back to the Big Show on TSN 1290.
This is the Big Show podcast on TSN 1290.ca. Catch the Big Show with Jim Toth, Troy Westwood, and Brandon Ruwicki. Weekdays 6 to 11 on TSN 1290.
Uh-huh. back on the Big Show, TSN 1290 and TSN1290.ca. Jim Toth, Troy Westwood, Brandon Rewicki, and your calls on the Boston Pizza fan line, 780-1290. You can also text your thoughts to us at 1290-90 with standard message rates applying. David, you're starting us off today on the Big Show. Go ahead.
Guys, it's a snowy day here in Calgary, but it's just fine because it's October. And hockey is just a couple days away. How great is that? It's magical.
I heard Southern Alberta got 20 centimeters.
Shut up. Are you serious?
Yeah, I just had a rather treacherous drive into work, but I'm going to tell you what. This is, to me, the most important season. I've never been as pumped up for a jet season since they came back a few years ago, and 2011 was magic. Here's what's going to happen this year. One of two things is going to happen. At least I pray, but I'm not religious, but I'll pray for these two things. One, I want the playoffs. I want a whiteout. I want the city that I grew up in to be basking in playoff success as it so sorely deserves. But if that doesn't happen, equally is okay with me. Well, not equally, but maybe as a consolation prize, people can start sharpening their pitchforks and getting their torches lit, and maybe we can finally get this Kevin Cheveldayoff clown show out of Winnipeg, because of all seasons to gamble on Steve Mason, you're going to go with Steve Mason this year. I actually joked. I remember one of the last calls I made to you guys in the offseason before we dusted off last year. I joked that there was no way we'd get Darling or any one of the high-profile goaltenders. Kevin Cheveldayoff has hitched his wagon to a bargain, a deal. And now maybe Mason surprises me and does good and carries us to the playoffs. But if I'm Kevin Cheveldayoff, I would have made the move for Darling, which is what I wanted to happen, and I think would have been a smart move. So, once again, we've decided to go the budget route, but I'm not going to be too negative because the season is anew, but one of two things can happen. Let us please be rid of this clown show, or, for God's sakes, give us some playoff victories. That's what I'm hoping for, guys.
What do you find a clown show from Cheveldayoff and what he's done?
Okay, how about Wade Flaherty still being the goaltending coach and not improving a single goaltender, or Charlie Huddy still being a coach?
Let me ask you something.
That's what I call clown show. What I also call clown show is a guy like Mark Stewart finally being bought out after 6 years. Or, you know, the fact that we still have guys like Tanev dragging his knuckles through our lineup. I mean, there's so many of these roster decisions that are absolutely baffling to me. Or how about not being able to fix the goaltending for the entire time he's been here? And Steve Mason hasn't yet proven that the goaltending has been fixed.
I understand your fever, David. Well, I don't understand it, to be honest with you. But this whole Mason thing, he hasn't played a game yet. Like, you're very down on Steve Mason, and he hasn't played a game yet. Like, you're talking as if he's 2-17 to start the year.
When people have a real strong take on Flaherty as well, it's like, well, they haven't done anything with the goalies. Well, who have the goalies been? Pav and Hellebuck? I don't get, like, if Pav didn't work hard enough to be the best player he could be, what can you – you can't expect it. Like, that's not on the coach's shoulders to tune in a guy and to make him be something maybe that he's not, right? Like, and to say that that is somehow he's failed Hellebuck after one sort of down or a season that he didn't quite meet expectations, I just think the take on Flaherty is always a little bit strong this point, because none of us really know the relationship with the goalies and just what exactly he contributes to the situation, right? And when people talk about the goalies, they make it sound like there's four or five that have trotted through here who have all diminished as during their time here.
Well, and I will say this about Flaherty too, like I mentioned this a month ago, people forget that Rick St. Croix wasn't around when Connor Hellebuck was in the A, and Wade Flaherty was in charge of that as well. He wasn't around when Michael Hutchinson put up the numbers he put up in the A. Like, that was under Wade Flaherty. So people like to tell me that Wade Flaherty has ruined or not improved these goalies, but I also know that Wade Flaherty was in charge of them when they were American Hockey League goalies and put up those numbers. So I just appreciate the call, David. Is he still there? Or
no.
Dave's gone? Well, stay safe in Calgary. I know you got a ton of snow there too, but I just find it interesting the whole Mason thought of it. Just, I don't know what to expect from Mason. I know his numbers when they're not good, and I know them when they're good, and I know what his numbers were last year. It's a different team. It's a different, you know, defensive core in front of him. I'm very interested to see what he will do, but I'm not going to sit here already and label him as if it's not working. It hasn't started yet.
So, to term it a clown show is absolutely ridiculous to me, given how strong, like, you look at what's in the cupboards and the level of their young talent and what's here and all the rest of it. Yeah, grabbing Scott Darling would have been real nice for sure, but to label what Cheveldayoff has done as a clown show, I think that would be a very small percentage of opinion.
And even then, Scott Darling has how many games to his NHL resume so far? Like, that's... I agree he was probably the best bet available, but that's still a pretty huge leap to take, and you're giving 4 or 5 years instead of the 2 years where you can kind of bridge the gap to see where Hellebuck and Carmi are after that.
He's also 28, and I think people forget that. Like, Hellebuck is still... In the Jets' mind, in my perspective of what the Jets think, the goalie of the future. Yeah. You're not going to lock up a guy at 28 for 4 or 5 years, because that's why another reason you got Mason is because it's 2 years. And they expect Hellebuck to be ready by then going forward. Interesting stuff, David. We appreciate the call. And drive safe, as you said, in Calgary. Thanks for weighing in. Boss Pizza Fan Line, 780-1290. Who's next?
Yeah, we'll get Darren and Norm to hang on, but we'll go to Brady.
Brady, you're on the Big Show. Go ahead.
Hey, I just wanted to chime in on Mason because I'm just sick of people blasting the guy and he hasn't played a game. Exactly what you said. Darling probably, even if we would have dealt for his rights, I doubted he would have won a sign here since it was only, you know, you're only going to offer him 2 years because you are relying on Hellebuck being ready. But then I'll just hang up after this because I'm in the Tim Hortons drive through here. but Mason, I thought I saw a stat right before they signed him that in his last 20 games, he was like a 925, 12 or 13 wins, was lights out, single-handedly almost put Philly in the playoffs, but it was just an abysmal start on a really bad, bad Phillies team that was fighting through injuries. My sister-in-law lives in Philly, so I do chime in on that team quite a bit and watch them. So, yeah, I just thoughts on that. I don't. Maybe you guys can find that stat, but he was lights out. Okay, guys, thanks.
Take care, man.
Brandon Rewicki is our Flyers stats guy, so we'll dig that out for you.
Yeah, I don't know the exact numbers of that. He's had a couple real crazy stretches where he gets hot like that, but overall, even with last year's disappointment of a season that he had a .918 save percentage over 4 seasons in Philly playing a starter's load. So, you know, even when he's played a handful of games behind, I think we could all agree, maybe one of the 3 worst defenses in the NHL during that time, still able to put above average starters numbers.
His January, February, March last year, he only had 2 starts in March and 2 in January, but went 952, 920, 939.
Bob McKenzie just tweeting out, talks between unrestricted free agent Jaromir Jagr and the Calgary Flames are continuing/progressing. Not yet a done deal, but they are working towards that. It's looking more and more like Jaromir Jagr is going to be a Calgary Flame this year.
It will be fun to watch.
Interesting, for sure. I look forward to that. Thanks for the call, Brady. We appreciate it. Enjoy your Tim Hortons, as we do every morning. Mm-hmm.
Thanks to Nasley and the fantastic staff across the street.
Woo! Going back to the Boss Pizza fan line now, 780-1290. Once again, Bob McKenzie just tweeting, not a done deal yet, but they're working towards that, Jagr and the Calgary Flames. Darren, you're on the Big Show, TSN 1290. Go ahead, sir.
Yeah, you guys took all my points. the guy from Calgary, I don't know if he watches hockey or just likes hot takes, but when you've got Comrie and Hellebuck in the pipeline, why would you lock up another young goalie? Yeah. I didn't get his call.
Yeah, there's a lot of people who wanted to go the Darling route, but he's 28 years old, and I like Scott Darling as a goaltender. I'm very interested to see what he does as a starter, but I think another part of when you talk bargain basement and pricing and all this on Mason, it's there's not a lot of guys that didn't want to come here. I mean, Brian Elliott's the only other guy that signed a 2-year deal. I think they have some guys in the system that they don't want on the books in 2 years from now.
I would agree. And I also agree with you guys about Tanev. I would rather give Patan a really good look. I don't think the Jets need to go the traditional fourth line route. I think I'd like to see our fourth line playing 8 to 10 minutes a game kind of thing. I think we can roll four lines comfortably with a lot of the talent we have.
I so wildly agree with you as far as the rolling the four lines, and most certainly when you're talking sort of the old understanding of what a fourth line is and all the rest of it. But
yes.
I've been screaming to put more talent out on the PK, and I was looking earlier this morning at what they do in Boston, number one penalty kill. Bergeron only plays 14 minutes and 19 seconds, 5-on-5. Blake Wheeler last year played 15:48, so there's a minute 30 difference. Bergeron is the number one penalty killer on the Boston Bruins. Marchand is number four. They're both those guys are on their top line, 209, 153 on the penalty kill, and they both put in a bunch of time on the power play as well. Like that's I've been saying this for months now. If the Jets and Maurice can get comfortable rolling the four lines through and absorbing more of that 5-on-5 time with the third and fourth line, you can utilize a guy like Wheeler and Little, for instance, more on the PK. You look, you know, for the Jets, you look at the Jets who are desperate to improve that penalty kill. And you look at some of the top penalty kills in the NHL where you got Kessler as the top guy with Anaheim, Steen, the number two guy with the Blues, and then you bounce over and you look at who the Jets have out on the penalty kill situations that lead the team shorthanded, Lowry, Armia, Tanev, Mathias, Kopp. Like, really, put your best guys. If you want to make a drastic improvement to your penalty kill, use talent on your penalty kill.
Agreed.
I disagree with that. I don't want to see Blake Wheeler and Mark Scheifele killing penalties on this team.
I didn't say Scheifele. I said Little. And if you don't want to see your upper-end guys on the penalty kill, JT, enjoy the 25th-ranked penalty kill again.
I don't buy into that also. I mean, the Chicago Blackhawks, who do they use on the penalty kill? There's other good teams with good lines. I get what you're saying about Boston.
I just checked three teams who are the three of the top teams in the NHL for penalty kill, JT, and I just and I'm talking Bergeron, Marchand, 1-2 here for Boston. I brought up Kessler with Anaheim, Steen with St. Louis. I'll go all the way through the list if you want, but you notice it that there's a lot of high end players who are out there on successful penalty kills. You don't throw out the fourth line guys. It makes sense, all the sense in the world to me. You want as much puck understanding skill out there as possible.
So what are you playing with the pendant for the way the Jets have taken penalties, and even if they cut down that a little bit, what are you playing Scheifele, Wheeler, Little? You said not Scheifele. So what are you playing Wheeler and Little a night?
Well, my example is that you take away some – I just said that 5-on-5 time, in just contrast to the way Boston manages Bergeron's – like Bergeron puts – Bergeron on the power play was 257 a night. Same with Blake Wheeler. He was basically 256. But when you go look, when Bergeron's the number one guy in Boston for the penalty kill for minutes, time per ice, or per game, when you compare their even strength numbers, Wheeler's out there for 15:48 a night. Bergeron's out there for 14:19. So that's a minute and a half that you can utilize a guy like Blake Wheeler, or that's just a lot of time that you can utilize some more of that for the penalty kill. And like lessen his even strength time, utilize more on your bottom end of your roster on the 3-4 lines, 5-on-5, and you can use your upper end talent more so as needed on special teams.
And if Blake Wheeler does what Andrew Kopp did on Saturday, are you now playing these fourth line guys you don't want on the penalty kill top line minutes because he's out for 6 weeks?
Well, yeah, you know what, man? I just told you the Bergeron, Marchand, Kessler, Steen are guys out there all the time for these upper end teams for the penalty kill.
Yeah, but they're not the Tarasenkos. They're not the Pasternaks. They're not the high end scoring talent. They're very good, solid defensive players. I get that. And they're high end offensive players, but they're not the top scorers on the team, which Wheeler is.
Well, you can. I think there's enough scoring on the Winnipeg Jets if you're going to diminish that a little bit with this 5-on-5 time, but use the talent. The Jets have to improve their penalty kill. If you're going to roll out the same type of personnel for the penalty kill, how is that going to help your penalty kill improve? Is it all going to be Steve Mason? Right? Is that what we're doing? Steve Mason is going to make our penalty kill better.
I think Tyler Myers will. I think Dmitry Kulikov will. And I think that guys like Lowry and Kopp, when healthy and stuff, can make your penalty kill better. I believe they can get better without using the high-end talent. I agree to disagree. I don't want Brian Little with how he gets injured over the past couple of years. I don't want Blake Wheeler to be blocking shots. That's just me. That's my philosophy. But agree to disagree on that. Darren, we appreciate the call. Thank you. Who's next on the Boss Pizza? Oh, we got to take a break, but we'll get to more of your calls when we come back on the Boss Pizza Fan Line. 780-1290 on The Big Show next.
This is The Big Show Podcast on TSN1290.ca. Catch The Big Show with Jim Toth, Troy Westwood, and Brandon Ruwicki. Weekdays 6 to 11 on TSN1290.
Back on the Boss Pizza Fan Line and The Big Show on TSN 1290.ca. Jim Toth, Troy Westwood, Brandon Ruwicki with you and your thoughts on the Jets, the Bombers, and everything else. NFL Week 4 from the weekend, heading into a week of Major League Baseball playoffs as well. 780-1290. Alan, you're on the show. Go ahead, sir.
Hey, good morning, guys.
Morning.
I'd like to make a comment about that person that just called in and called Chevy's handling of the Jets is a clown show. I mean, guys like that, they're not fans. They're antagonizers. You can't phone in and make those kind of comments. I mean, Mason hasn't even had a chance, like you said, to even show what he's got. And, you know, I mean, look at what happened with Edmonton. For years, they've been building that team. And look at where they are now. We're the same. You know, Chevy's been putting together this team slowly but surely, and he's doing a fantastic job. And don't judge until at least the season starts and we get maybe 20 games into it, and then we'll see where we're at. I'm extremely excited about this team this year. I think this is it. I think this is the year. And by the way, the Bombers played awesome on the weekend, and that is very exciting stuff. We've got ourselves a good team there, this finally, after all these years. So, anyways, that guy shouldn't phone in. People like that don't want to hear that stuff.
Well, all opinions welcome, Alan. So we do appreciate David from Calgary taking the time. But fair enough to the whole clown show thing is, I mean, I just disagree with that. You can just look at the roster and the stuff that's been done. And, you know, no GM bats 1,000, as the saying goes. But I can't understand how you don't look at this roster and think that it's been a quote-unquote clown show here with the Jets. But we appreciate the call, Alan, and David's as well from Calgary. All opinions welcome on the Boss Pizza Fan Line, 780-1290. Neil, you're on the Big Show. Go ahead.
I have to rebut our kicker there. I think you're missing one point with regards to using your high-end talent on the penalty kill. If we were really good at it, I could justify using that and burning those guys out to do it, but we're really not good at it. So why not save them for what they should be doing, power play and 5-on-5, and even if we're no better, at least they're fresher and you might get some traction going the other way.
My point, though, is on the power play, like the top team power play won't even probably include Wheeler and Little. Is that correct?
It would have, well, as it is now, it would have Wheeler, but not Little.
But you don't, would you, you can have a power play, think of it, without Wheeler on it. Your top end.
To try and save him, you mean?
And are we sure that Wheeler's going to be on it? They had Lowry in front of the net, right? The 1-3-1.
They had Wheeler on the opposite half wall to Laine.
I think they're both going to be on the first or second. I don't think they're both going to be on the first, but I think they're both going to be involved in the power play.
The strongest point, though, that I feel is with the penalty kill, you can't go into this year with doing the same thing the same way. And I'm not so sure, like when you look at the talent that Winnipeg puts out there for the penalty kill compared to the other teams that are successful in the league, it is very different. There's just a different element. You know, you got to put guys out there. If you've got like a Joel Armia, it looks pretty smart out there with a stick and defensive. But you have to put guys out there with defensive leanings that can get around the ice pretty well. And sometimes I wonder about that a little bit. Like, for instance, an Adam Lowry, is he fast enough? And it depends on also the system that they're going to use. If they're using this super passive, collapse deep in their own zone, that just looks like impending disaster this year for the PK. But if you're going to use a penalty kill that goes and stifles and removes space and time and all the rest of it, the way we see the successful ones typically do, is a guy like Adam Lowry the right guy to have out there?
Well, the structure and the tactics are by far the most important thing. Like you kind of touched on there. You can put whoever you want out there. It doesn't matter if you're not executing things the right way. And they haven't at least begun the process of changing how they go about that yet so far. But you look at, if you want to just keep it to the top 10 teams in penalty kill last year, you know, you do need your top guys to be among your, when you're talking specifically forwards, you need to have kind of two, I guess, more skilled guys in your top six as part of your top four penalty killing forwards. Every single one of those top 10 teams has that in their lineup.
And this is what my point with Boston, specifically using them, because of what Bergeron and Marchand and how important they are to the team. They are number one and four for penalty kill time on the team, and they're 1-2 on the power play. So they're both used big time on special teams. Where they make it up is they're played less at even strength. And so that is just simply utilizing your third and fourth lines at a higher rate than what a team typically has done, like in the Jets in the past, where they give 4 minutes to their fourth line. I don't think the Jets make the playoffs this year, boys, unless the fourth line averages something considerably higher. If Paul Maurice isn't able to or willing to roll the four lines at a much higher rate, that's how you're going to save the top-end talent.
I would argue the less Bergeron and Marchand 5-on-5 is why they didn't make the playoffs.
They did make the playoffs.
The Bruins, but how'd they do in the playoffs? Like, I don't think that I think the less 5-on-5 is – I think if you can take less penalties, that's more instrumental than playing on the penalty kill for your high-end guys. But it's two interesting philosophies on what you do and the lineup. And really what it comes down to is who you have for third and fourth line guys, because that dictates where you can play them and where. If you have really good PK guys down there, you can play them. If you don't, you have to look at other options.
I disagree. Well, to me, you use them 5-on-5. That's, you just want to break even with your bottom half. Or you're for sure your fourth line in a 5-on-5 situation.
We're way over. We got to take a break. We'll take more of your calls. Thanks, Neil. When we come back to Boss Pizza Fan Line, 780-1290.
This is the Big Show podcast on TSN1290.ca. Catch the Big Show with Jim Toth, Troy Westwood, and Brandon Ruwicki. Weekdays 6 to 11 on TSN1290.
Back on the Big Show, TSN 1290, TSN1290.ca. You can text 1290-90 with standard message rates applying, or give us a call on the Boston Pizza fan line, 780-1290. Jim, Troy, and Brandon, and your calls on a Monday. Brian, you're on the Big Show. Go ahead, sir. Hi, Brian. Brian. Well, we'll take this time to let you know, as Brandon or Wiki just did, that it's Trubisky time.
I got the itch.
And may I say this, like, oh, yeah.
You got the itch for Mitch?
Well, you look at Deshaun Watson, another first-year quarterback.
Boy, does he look good, huh?
And you're sitting there going, well, why wouldn't you? You traded up for this guy. The guy you chose over him or didn't choose is lighting it up. You got to do it. By the way, I just want to say this. I got a text on the weekend. I don't want to say which TSN female blonde hair reporter it was. Based out of Winnipeg. And covers the Jets and the Bombers and everything else. And it was a picture of Aaron Rodgers pregame talking to Mike Glennon and just offered this up as a new screensaver. I find that offensive and over the line. And I think that Aaron Rodgers' proof in that photo that he cursed Mike Glennon in that game there. We'll move along. Brian, try again if you wish to on the Boss Pizza fan line, 780-1290. We're just getting through some more calls here.
Seeing a funny tweet here from NFL Retweet, which is sort of, they just have fun with things NFL. And it's a photo of the Giants receivers. Remember on that boating trip?
Yes.
And they said the New York Giants have not won a game since this picture was taken.
Again, I blame Bieber. Bieber, you ruined the Giants. What do you do there? Like, they lost 5 games all of last year, and this year they were 0-4. Like, I mean, I'm never a big proponent for gassing the coach, but is it coach related in your mind?
Well, I don't know, man. They got real serious problems with that O-line.
That's true.
Yeah, real serious problems.
I just saw that you retweeted it. Boss Pizza Fan Line, 780-1290. Norm, you're on the Big Show. Go ahead, Norm.
Good morning, gentlemen. How are you?
Well, thanks.
Bombers are doing awesome, eh?
Yeah, they looked real good.
I love what they're doing this year. Hey, I was going to say with the Jets, I got my own little program going for the top 10. See who gets to 10 points first, who gets 10 goals first, who gets 10 assists first. And I think now that preseason's over, I'm penciling in Patrick Laine, I think, for all three of them. And I was going to say one more thing before I hang up, guys. How many games, as a rule, does it take Winnipeg to get to your 10 wins in a season so far? And I'll hang up.
How many this year?
Well, you're just transfixed on 10, huh?
Man. I've said this for a while now,
20.
As we all had. This schedule is very, very interesting. You'll know by the end of this month, I think, things will go.
I think
go.
He means normally. How long did it take them to win?
Yeah, I don't know that. I would have to look that up.
They're always sniffing around 500, so 20 to 25 probably.
That would be unfortunate.
No, not this year. I'm saying in years
past. Oh, yeah.
I think that's what he asked in years past.
Yeah, how long it take on average. That's math, Norm, so we'll have to look that up off the top of our heads. But as we said, Toronto at home on Wednesday, then in Calgary, Edmonton, Vancouver, home to Carolina, Columbus, Minnesota, in Pittsburgh, Columbus, back-to-back nights, home after a day off to face Pittsburgh again, and then Minnesota. It's going to be a very interesting, intriguing month here for the first
time. How many nights off does any team get this year, though? Honestly, there's... You look at Vegas, Vancouver, Colorado, New Jersey, Detroit. I guess those teams, and then after that, like, even if you want to look at the Buffaloes and the Phillies and the Islander, like, you're not getting a night off anywhere.
What's really interesting is after that Minnesota game on the 20th at home, they then have 5 days off before being in Pittsburgh. And then back-to-back, though, Pittsburgh, Columbus, and then a day off, and then Pittsburgh here, and then down to Minnesota. So that's probably why you get those days there, because that's a lot of traveling and games there.
Even with all the parity and all the rest of it, the Jets are still in a real tough, like, this isn't a gentle October at all, right? To see the win percentage of the teams they're playing, when you're talking about, like, last year, go back, see what the win percentage was for Pittsburgh, Minnesota, Columbus, Mini, I think I already said Edmonton, Calgary. Like, that's pretty scary. They just got a scary month here.
Right before we get back to the Boss Pizza fan line, Pierre LeBrun now reporting, according to Blues GM Doug Armstrong, the Blues made an offer to Jaromir Jagr over the weekend, was informed he's gone in another direction. And the latest reports from LeBrun and Bob McKenzie are a deal is being worked on in Calgary for Jaromir Jagr. Boss Pizza fan line, 780-1290. Dave, you're on the program. Go ahead, sir.
Hey, good morning, gentlemen.
Morning.
How are you guys doing today?
Good, thanks. You?
Good. Okay, so the penalty kill, which I find always an interesting topic. Who is the Jets, like, who's been the Jets' best face-off guy the past 3-4 seasons?
Just off the top of my head would be Brian Little, I would think.
Uh-huh. Yeah, okay, so he should be killing penalties then, because if you're not winning the draw, you're in trouble.
Yeah.
I've always thought that Blake Wheeler is your most responsible two-way player. You know, he seems to play a 200-foot game.
Both those guys,
My mind, that's your second forward on your penalty kill. Like, I like Joel Armia out there. I don't mind Lowry, but I'm with Troy on this. Like, those two guys are your best two, should be your two best penalty killers, just based on those two things alone.
Okay.
Have a great day.
Great call, Dave.
You too,
Dave. Best call of the day. You win the award.
I wouldn't go that far. I just, again, it's an interesting different philosophy. I think even if you get in the playoffs then, that was my point against Boston. Not that they didn't make the playoffs, but once they got in, it's just, that's a lot of hockey from your high-end players if you're in the playoffs and you want to get more out of them at a different level. But we'll see where it all goes when the lineup comes together for Wednesday night right here on TSN 1290, your home of the Jets. Thanks for the call, Dave. Back to the Boss Pizza fan line. Who's next?
We'll get Jim and David to hold on, but let's go to Mike.
Mike, you're on the big show. Go ahead.
Hey, good morning, guys.
Morning.
Well, this is going to be an interesting season.
I
really don't know who I had my 12 players right off the bat I thought would make the team on the forwards, and I think I've got 11 of them making it. I just don't know who's going to be the 13th forward. It's either going to be Dano, Lapon, or Patan.
Yeah, I don't know if Lapon makes this team just because of his contract and everything else. To me, there's two spots for three players, and it's Patan, Dano, and Tanev.
Oh, I don't have Tanev at all.
What you do with that three spots, and depending on whether Hendricks and Kopp are ready at the start of the season.
I'm right there with you with the Tanev thing. He's fun to watch. Man, he's just like he's hell on wheels out there, the way he flies around. Someone described him as the Tasmanian devil. But you can't have a guy who gives you 0.04 points production. He just can't have that. And it's not like he's... If he was a wicked defensive player, and that really popped off as well, but he's just, I don't know, man. As the whole Tanev thing, if I'm right there with Wicks, like if he gets the nod over Dano, for instance, I that's just perplexing as the Dickens to me.
Hey, and the one thing that would be working in his favor is his work on the penalty kill. And last year, he was one of the worst penalty killing forwards for the team when it came to both shots on goal and goals that the Jets allowed. So, like, that's even the one ace up his sleeve that you would think he would have just kind of by looking at his physical skill set. He just doesn't do a good enough job for the team. So, there is no argument you can make that would have Tanev over a guy like Marco Dano, never mind the Cops and the Mathiases on the team as well.
Do you like him on the penalty kill?
Who are you asking?
Tanev. Both of you.
Well, he just told you how bad he is on the penalty kill.
So you don't like him at all there?
He's horrible on the
penalty kill. No, I just don't like him because he gives up more goals and shots than any other forward.
Sorry,
on the
I'm
team.
Just putting this through here, too. I'm looking this up, so I wasn't listening to you again. I apologize. I will listen more. Do you like him on the penalty kill? No?
No, hell no.
Thanks, Mike. Appreciate the call on the Boss Pizza Fan Line, 780-1290. Jim, you're on the program. Go ahead.
Hi, I'm just looking at my PVR, wanting to. I like to tape the games and watch them, and I'm just wondering if the game is blacked out.
Yeah, it was not broadcast. Yeah,
it was not broadcast. It was on the TSN Go app because of commitments to the CFL games, the Bomber Eskimo game, and the Invictus closing ceremonies that were broadcast. So they were putting it on the TSN Go app, and that had technical difficulties till the third period. So it was not broadcasted on television and wasn't scheduled to be on Saturday.
What about the home opener?
Well, yeah. I mean, again, all regular season games will be broadcast. All preseason games were. TSN TV made a decision because of the Invictus games closing ceremonies and the regular season CFL games that they would put a preseason game on the Go app. So that's why it wasn't on a television.
No, I'm talking about the game on Wednesday.
Yeah, it'll be
yes,
on TV, man.
All regular season games will be broadcast on television. Thanks for the call, Jim. We appreciate it. 780-1290. David, you're on the program. Go ahead, sir.
Hi, guys. I got a couple questions for you and then a conclusion. So, first question is, how many seasons has the Jets had a essentially ineffective fourth line?
Upon arrival.
And second question would be, most of the elite teams have a scoring third line, would be a conclusion that I have as well, right?
At this point, yeah.
So then a Hendricks, Kopp, Mathias line, that looks just like what we've had. Like, it may be slightly better, but can you actually play them more than 7-8 minutes in a five-on-five situation?
I agree with the point you're getting to, yeah.
So regardless of what they bring to the table in terms of penalty kill, it doesn't look any different than what we've had in the past. So to me, putting Lowry down on the fourth line with a Kopp and somebody makes a whole lot more sense because they can chew up more minutes. And, you know, we've seen in the past that the best players tend to be the best penalty killers as well. And I know that you try to get them off of that so that they're fresher for five-on-five play, but if you can get more minutes out of your fourth line, you accomplish the same thing.
Yep.
And then you can put to me it would look like a Perreault, Patan, Dano-type third line that potentially could give you some production.
You know what, man? Bouncing Perreault to the middle and then moving Lowry to the fourth line would be one hell of a move. And There's no indication it's going to happen, but I so agree with you, David, in the point that you're making there and what that would do to help this team.
Defensively, Nick Petan has shown me nothing to earn a third-line center position.
I think he said to put Perreault there.
No, I know, but I'm just bringing this up, too. When you're talking about bumping Lowry out of the third-line center, regardless of who you put there, and I would assume it's – I wouldn't put Perreault in the middle.
That's what he just suggested.
Yeah, and I'm saying I wouldn't do that.
I think you could even have, you know, Lowry as your quote-unquote third-line center. And if you had a Lowry-Perreault-Armia line, that's not a bad trio to have there. You might not score as much as some of the other third lines in the NHL, but you're somewhere kind of in the middle at the very least. And you could throw a fourth line of, say, even Kopp, Dano, and Mathias. And that one, that's a fourth line that's, you know, it's not great, but it's not brutal either. I think there's ways that you can work with this roster, and you could even, you know, have the Lowry line play, I don't know, something like 12, 13 minutes, depending on special teams, and then have the fourth line play somewhere around 8 minutes, and you're kind of accomplishing similar to what we were talking about there.
I think they would score more than the third line has historically here. Like, I don't know if they'd light it up totally, but I think with a Perreault, Lowry, Armia line, they would score more than we've seen a third line score here in Winnipeg.
Unquestioned. I would agree with that too, yeah.
Thanks for the call, David. We appreciate it. On the Boss Pizza fan line, 780-1290. We've got to take our final break, but we do have plenty of time to get to more of your calls. And we come back to the Big Show, TSN 1290.
This is the Big Show podcast on TSN 1290.ca. Catch the Big Show with Jim Toth, Troy Westwood, and Brandon Ruwicki. Weekdays 6 to 11 on TSN 1290.
This just in the CFL, the Hamilton Tiger Cats have traded running back C.J. Gable to the Edmonton Eskimos in exchange for two players on their negotiation list. Gable, 29 years old, 51 games. The last five seasons with the Tiger Cats just went for well over 100 in the game against Toronto on Saturday. This vastly, in my opinion, vastly improves the Edmonton Eskimos.
Yeah, like they just lost. They lost another back in the game with Winnipeg, and this is, you know, they need to find someone, I guess, right? Like they're four deep, I think, in their organization and getting running backs. And Hamilton's got to be happy with their depth. So it's too late for Edmonton, I think, for it to matter as far as having implications against Winnipeg, at least until the playoffs start. But Gable should flourish in Edmonton for sure.
Boss Pizza fan line, 780-1290. If you want to get in on the conversation on the Big Show here on TSN 1290, Jim Toth, Troy Westwood, and Brandon Ruwicki, and Mr. North End Rick, good morning.
Who are we kidding? There's no time to call in. I'm going to take up the rest of the time right here. I'm thinking that I know most people didn't get a chance to see that game on that last game against Calgary due to the TSN Go app being faulty. But near the end of it, they had it going, and I was able to stream it. I think that Nick Petan may have made this team on the strength of one back check. He does enough offensively, but you always wondered about his defensive abilities, and he screamed back on a back check that was fantastic, and he definitely saved a goal for it. And the other thing I wanted to touch on was it was fantastic to see a three-on-three that didn't include Dustin Byfuglien.
Huh.
It was fun to watch, boys. That was really, really nice to see. Morrissey, Truba, Myers, you know, these guys can still play just as well, and they don't give it up defensively as much. So really, really interesting take on that. Hey, thanks, boys.
Thanks, North Henrik. You know, that's interesting, too, because we talk about the guys on the roster and all that, but the guys on the roster and where they'll play, that's one thing I did see more of in this training camp was guys in different like Tyler Myers was on the power play a ton on Saturday, too, and he's just a guy I thought would be a penalty-killing guy. Like to me, Myers on the power play has looked good with his reach and his passing ability. Like they've been putting some guys in different spaces to see what they'd get out of them, like the 3-on-3 on Saturday and opportunities like that.
To me, the guy that's got to be back there quarterbacking that in their number one power play is Truba. Period. End of story.
I wouldn't hold my breath on that, though.
You think they use Bufflin on the first power play?
Yep.
Yes.
Yep.
I'm going to be really upset if they do.
I'm just trying to warn you. They did it all preseason and they did it all last year. They're not going to shy away from that.
How many points do you have this preseason?
I would have to look that up.
I'd look it up, but then I can't listen to you. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah, the power play was rolling pretty good this preseason.
Yeah,
so
I have
no
issues with
them not wanting to make any changes.
And he was out there. He's gotten 50 points a year as a blue liner.
As long as he doesn't dominate the shots taken on that power play.
Their power play has sucked, though, JT. That's the thing. I don't care how many points he's gotten and how many have come on the power play. By and large, this power play has stunk when Bufflin's got it. And if Bufflin is carrying the puck up the ice, that is disaster for the power play.
Well, who carries it up? I agree, but I have a problem with him being on the power play.
Well,
what did you guys think of Myers on the power play this preseason?
He's okay. He's not. I don't think he's going to be utilized very often on the power play.
No, and for me, I'd be looking at fourth or fifth option. After Bufflin, Morrissey, Trouba, then if you want to go him or Enstrom, I guess depending on one. He's got a decent one-timer, but I don't even think he'll factor into the power play.
I just liked his passing on it. Like, I thought he moved the puck well and got it to the right places really quick, like more so than – and I don't think he'll be on it either, but I just found it interesting that he got so much time on it and that he actually impressed me out there on it. Lots to talk about. The Jets hit the ice in 30 minutes from now at 10:30 at Bell MTS Place. The deadline for rosters is tomorrow at 4 p.m. We'll see what the lineups look like at today's practice, and we'll have that for you throughout the day here on TSN 1290. And then, of course, we'll dissect that even more and get into the discussion as they continue to round out the roster for opening night. 6 o'clock puck drop right here on TSN 1290 Wednesday between the Leafs and the Winnipeg Jets. We have a couple things to give away today. A pair of tickets to the PBR on October 6th at Bell MTS Place and a pair of tickets to Miranda Lambert on October 7th at Bell MTS Place 2. We really appreciate you listening. So 780-1290, 780-1290, the 12th and 13th callers through will win both of those prizes. It's been a rough morning across the world, and especially in North America and in Las Vegas. We send our best wishes to all those affected and involved. And, of course, thank you for listening today on what has been a tough morning, I'm sure, for all. On behalf of Troy Westwood, Brandon Rewicki, and myself, Jim Toth, we appreciate you listening. We'll do it again tomorrow morning at 6 a.m. on The Big Show on TSN 1290.
This is The Big Show Podcast on TSN 1290.ca. Catch The Big Show with Jim Toth, Troy Westwood, and Brandon Rewicki. Weekdays 6 to 11 on TSN 1290.